My name is Scott, Senator Scott Dibble. I chair the Transit Subcommittee of the Transportation Division, and I'll be co-chairing with my counterpart, Senator Rest, who chairs the airports, waterways, et cetera, subdivision of the Transportation Subcommittee. In deference to her seniority, I'll be handing the gavel over to Senator Rest when she comes down. So with that, why don't we get started with Senator Saltzman, I-94 corridor park and ride facility.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I would like to note that we do not have a bill number yet. The bill will be dropped on February 4th, but this is a bonding request to the Metropolitan Council for $1.5 million with the proceeds to be used for a park and ride facility in the city of Woodbury for the I-94 corridor transitway. And I do want to note that while I cannot make an amendment today, I would like to at some point have the language changed on page 1, line 7, to delete "for a grant to Washington County."
Members, that language is coming around. That's Amendment BB01. We'll make note of that, and when we're officially convened as a legislature, we'll make that change to this bill.
Very good. So at this time, Mr. Chair, I know that you have a tight timeline. I am very pleased that our County Commissioner Gary Kriesel, who chairs the I-94 corridor, is here, as well as Mayor Bill Hargis from the City of Woodbury. And we are delighted to see action in the East Metro. And what I do want to note about this bonding request is that there was a piece in last year's bonding bill. We believe it's also important to have geographic balance, and this is very helpful to the East Metro in accomplishing our vision of a stronger transit program. So at this time, Commissioner Kriesel.
Thank you, Senator. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am Washington County Commissioner Gary Kriesel, representing the St. Croix communities within the county. I am also chair of the I-94 Corridor Commission, which was created in May of last year. This group is made up of Ramsey and Washington counties, the communities from St. Paul to the St. Croix River. In addition to these governmental agencies, the commission has been actively engaging in the local business community and our partners on the east side of the St. Croix River. The focus of this commission is to begin the planning and the development of the I-94 corridor as a robust transitway. This includes maintaining mobility, providing economic development and growth opportunities, and improving livability for residents. I will now turn it over to Mayor Woodbury Mayor and I-94 Commission Vice Chair Bill Hargis to discuss the request that is before you.
Welcome, Mayor Hargis.
Thank you. The request you have before you is for the purchase of property, design and construction of a park and ride facility in the city of Woodbury near Manning Avenue and Interstate 94. The existing park and ride lots that we have in Woodbury and across I-94 and Oakdale are overflowing. People use them. The demand is there now for additional spaces to be added along the corridor and will be needed as we, in all the alternatives that are being studied by our I-94 commission, so this is makes sense in the long run. This proposed park and ride facility is in the Metropolitan Council's long-range transportation plan. It's also obviously supported by the City of Woodbury and will be beneficial as we develop our alternatives and we develop that part of our community. So we thank you for considering this, and we would be happy to answer any questions today or throughout your process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioner and Senator Saltzman. Anything further? Nope. Okay. Senator Saltzman, we will lay this on the table for possible consideration of for our recommendation to the capital bonding.
Thank you very much, Senator Dibble.
Senator Steedman is presenting a bill in another committee right now, so we'll jump. Is to call on Senator Foley. There he is. All right. So Senator Foley's item is, yes, number 15, members, on the printed, I will note, three-page agenda. So we have a lot to get through very quickly. So, Senator Foley, welcome.
Just came to wait. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm delighted to be here on behalf of one of the most important issues facing this committee. As you note, it says Foley Boulevard Rail Station.
Right.
And I have to admit that I'm not the Foley it was. That's my grandfather, and I'm proud of that. And I grew up, of course, in Coon Rapids, maybe several blocks from where this station would be. So I'm proud to say that. This is a $1 million fund for the Foley Boulevard North Star Commuting Rail Station in Coon Rapids. This station has the potential of having the highest ridership in any North Star commuter rail station on the line between Big Lake and Minneapolis. It would be located in near the current Foley Park and next to Highway 610. I brought Mr. Railroad, Commissioner Earhart, and he will fill in the gaps.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Commissioner North Star.
Thank you. I'm proud of that. I'm Dan Earhart. I'm chair and members of the committee here. I certainly appreciate coming here today. And I'm Canoga County Commissioner. I'm chair of the Rail Authority, and I'm chair of North Star. And I certainly, first of all, want to thank all of you that have helped and participated. And we went into successful operation with North Star just recently, and the ridership is doing very well. One of the stations along the North Star route was the Foley Station, which in the initial studies and looking at the Foley Station, the study showed that this would be probably, not probably, was going to be the best, most productive station of the entire line. But because of the formula that had been established by the federal government, that station was knocked out through that formula process because it had such great bus service, and that formula penalized you if you had bus service and truly operated as an intermodal site. But we're looking at the Foley Station as being a kind of a transportation hub for Anoka County, where not only for the county, but in the extended county, but with Highway 610, there would be a major traffic flow from the west, Hennepin County, from the east, Ramsey County, and we would see that that station would potentially have up through 25 to 30 train stops there a day. What we're looking here for is a $1 million inclusion in the bonding bill to continue with the studies and to move forward with ultimately a $14 million station. The county itself, Anoka County, the Rail Authority has actually proceeded, and because we are inclined to get things done with the partnership with the state, with the Met Council, and with the cooperation from legislators, and we have gone ahead actually have purchased property in this area. It certainly could be used for other things, buses or other transportation, but we are looking at that station as the hub for Anoka County. And by the way, you'll hear a little later about NLX, and the Foley Station is where the two trains come together, the North Star train from St. Cloud and the NLX, the Northern Lights Express from Duluth, would meet at the Foley Station. And so we would like to move forward and appreciate that that could be included in the bonding bill to move that station ahead. Also, by the way, we are in request through the stimulus money for a what we call the Third Main, and that is a project that has to move ahead if we're going to have any more rail capacity north, freight, or passenger, and that Northern Lights Express, we're looking at $99 million from the federal government on that, and that would connect right into that project. So this all fits together and fits the overall plan, the state and federal plans as in proceeding with rail transportation. So we'd appreciate consideration of that.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I'll just add that the news coming out of the Department of Transportation and the FTA recently about taking a much better approach to how we examine the costs and benefits of transit facilities was very welcome. And this is, and things like really good ideas like this now can be realized. So any questions, members? Okay, Senator Foley, we'll lay this over for possible inclusion in our recommendations to the capital bonding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. So, Senator Lynch, keep her up. Members, what number?
We're looking
14. Number 14 on our list. And the language is coming around. Welcome to the committee, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. We are here with SFXXX today, the Southern Rail Corridor proposal. And simply put, we bring this forward as a means to talk about jobs and economic development. And I would suggest to you that this $8 million request is complements the newly released draft of the statewide rail plan. And I'd like to acknowledge that this proposal was included in the governor's budget in the amount of $2 million. With me today, I have Commissioner Paul Wilson and Tim Geisler with the Mayo Clinic. And Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I would ask Commissioner Wilson to offer some background on this.
Commissioner Wilson.
Thank you very much, Senator, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to present some information along with my colleagues that are with me here today.
Please formally introduce yourself for
the
tape.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Yes. My name is Paul Wilson, Olmsted County Commissioner and member of the Olmsted County Rail Authority.
Thank you.
Very important. Thank you very much. Olmsted County, as you well know, is one of the higher growth, certainly the highest growth area among the state. We're proud of our continued growth, but we know that with that comes many challenges. And from those challenges, we need to seek opportunities for the betterment of the greater community. Among those is the need to expand our transportation infrastructure to support regional growth. I would point out also that the adoption of the bonding request by the regional Olmsted County Regional Rail Authority and the Olmsted County Board is the number one priority for a bonding request that we move forward with. So just to highlight that for you. Our community, greater community, Olmsted community, must plan for the projected increases in freight rail demand while protecting the thousands of patients, visitors, and employees who occupy downtown Rochester on any given day. The Southern Rail Corridor proposal is an opportunity to meet both of those objectives, increasing freight capacity through southern Minnesota and ensuring the safety of our community. Our $8 million request is necessary to pursue the appropriate planning steps over the next several years, and more importantly, to undertake the necessary analysis to develop a route that best meets the needs of our entire region and perhaps the needs of one of the economic heartbeats, if you will, of Minnesota. I would turn this over to Mr. Geisler.
Mr. Geisler.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. My name is Tim Geisler. I'm here representing the Mayo Clinic this morning. Mr. Chair and Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to make a few comments on behalf of Mayo Clinic for this proposal. As many of you know, the Mayo Clinic campus in Rochester supports the single largest assembly of the most sophisticated medical equipment in one location in the entire world. And we have over 150 intensive care units in the city of Rochester that are providing care to the most critically ill patients. Rail infrastructure decisions have become a critical component of Mayo Clinic's business plan and future. Rail transportation, both passenger and freight, will impact Mayo Clinic's decisions about future investment in Rochester. Decisions that are driven by the patient's best interest, and that's why we need a solution like the Southern Rail Corridor. But we hope that it's understood that this is not simply a parochial issue. Mayo Clinic is the state's largest private employer. We directly or indirectly employ or provide at least 65,000 high-quality jobs in the state. and we generate the economic equivalent of several malls of America for the state's economy. Our ability to attract millions of visitors, many of whom come from out of state, depends on the perception that we can deliver highest quality care in a safe and secure environment. In fact, our patients tell us that one of the reasons they come to Rochester is they believe that Rochester is a safe, clean, quiet community. There has already been studies to suggest a possible route that address concerns that have been addressed or raised with previous proposals. However, additional work is needed to look at what needs to be done to ensure that the capacity needs of the state and the region and the concerns of those impacted by a proposed route are adequately addressed in an open and transparent process. Please support our efforts to advance a freight rail solution for the good of our region and our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions at this point from the committee, from the proponents? Okay. Thank you, and we did have some folks call ahead who would like to also speak on this matter. I have listed on the agenda an Orrin Johnson. Orrin Johnson could come forward, please. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Senators. I'm Orrin Johnson, citizen of Dodge County, and with me is Kathy King, a citizen of Olmsted County.
Welcome.
We are the co-chairs of the Citizens Against the Rochester Bypass. The Citizens Against the Rochester Bypass do not support this bonding request for $8 million as requested by Senator Lynch. Present train volume on the line passing through Rochester is 3 to 5 trains per day. It appears that with the change of the administration at the federal level, coal will never be hauled on this line. There is also no interest in the state on building coal power plants either. This proposed route follows almost the exact route both the courts, including the 8th District Court of Appeals in 2003, and federal agencies have ruled against for a variety of reasons. This is not a shovel-ready project and will be litigated for years based on the above rulings. The past legal fights took over 10 years. This bypass route will not work for passenger rail. The latest route proposed by the Mayo for high-speed rail is through Rochester. Ridership would decrease as the distance from downtown increases on a proposed bypass. Canadian Pacific Railroad just finished spending $14 million to upgrade the tracks through Rochester in 2009. The present in-town route now has seamless welded rail. The state is expected to contribute $90 million of the $350 million and more tax dollars for the bypass for 3 to 5 trains per day. This is ridiculous when there are so many other transportation projects in southern Minnesota that would save lives but are going unfunded. I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to come forward on this matter? Okay. And with the admonition that we have many, many bills in our agenda.
Absolutely. So you have 15 or so, or 25, was that it? Dave Hansen, I happen to be, and I don't know if any of you know, that Dodge County, adjacent to Olmsted, has a rail authority. I went to the meeting statewide, and they're talking about going right through Dodge County, and we've never been contacted on that issue. I want to take issue, or at least mention that our concerns are that, in fact, there is an open and transparent work on this issue. Dodge County would, in fact, like them to remove the bypass idea from their request and have it be, because in fact we're talking about high-speed rail, and it can go through. One of the studies that they, in fact, the Gannett study that was made earlier states that it can go through, that passenger and freight can go through Rochester. That's what I want to say. I have passed out to each of you copies of our resolution from Dodge County, if you want to look at that. It tells the 7 reasons that we feel that the bypass idea, which goes through Dodge County, is really should be very open and a study. We know monies will be going to this. We think anyway it'll happen, but we want it not to consider bypass. Take that word out of it and be study for high-speed rail, and that's what it should be. The second alternative, you'll notice on the high-speed rail, the second alternative goes right through the middle of Dodge County. Goes on to Highway 56. The first one goes 52. Okay? Thank you very much.
Commissioner. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. In the interest of time, I'll keep my remarks brief. I am sure that you have gathered that this could be a much longer discussion, and duly so. But I would like to acknowledge that we have received federal funds to support this project to date. Those funds have been secured. And I think I'd like to focus my closing remarks not so much on the merits of this project and the importance of the economic impact that this proposal has for all of Minnesota, but rather to speak to those that are opposed to this. And I would say, one, I think that it's very helpful if we can all remember and sort of put into perspective that what we are here today talking about is the next step in what is a very long process. We are not talking about acquiring land. We're not talking about laying track. We are talking about how to best position Minnesota for the future, for the coming generations. And in order that we can do that, we need some additional analysis and evaluation. And that, members, is what this proposal before you is about. And to my constituents, some of which you've heard from today, who are supportive of this endeavor and some who are not, one of the things that I have felt very strongly about in agreeing to carry this forward, and I think I've been clear to everyone that I've had discussions with about this, that any route that moves forward, whether or not it's in southern Minnesota or northern Minnesota, any route that moves forward, landowner mitigation must be a large part of any discussion in any equation. And I'm committed to that. I've been very clear about that. And I will challenge you to find a stronger advocate that's going to work on behalf of those landowners as we move forward so that their cares and concerns are duly addressed in the process. And with that, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, I would ask for the committee's serious consideration.
Thank you, Senator Lynch. Questions from the committee? Comments? All right. Thank you, Senator Lynch. We will lay this bill over for consideration for possible recommendation to the Capital Investments Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair.
I'm going to call next on Senator Sharon. Number 18 on the agenda, Minnesota Valley Regional Railroad Authority. Senator Sharon has folks who need to get back home in this terrible weather. Of course, we all do, of course, and driving to the far reaches of the metro area is difficult, but getting down to the far reaches of the Minnesota River Valley is going to be even more challenging, so we'll try to get you on your way. Senator Sharon.
I wasn't sure hats were allowed, but it's pre-formal hearings, right? So. Thank you, Senators.
Sharon, what does it say is what I was asking.
Oh, is that what it
says? I can't
see
that far.
Rail equals jobs. I'll keep it on.
I think you should keep it on.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the time of the committee members to hear today. I know you have a lot and on this agenda, so I'm simply going to introduce Rob Edwards, who's the chair of the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Coalition, a coalition, if you remember from past years, that was organized of cities all along the Prairie Line Rail cities and townships and county commissioners and all of the legislators along that rail line have formed a coalition to bring the story of this rail to you and to ask for your partnership with the communities to make it a possible economic stimulus for our area. And also Bruce Pinsky, who's the chair of the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority. And with that, I would like Senator Dibble to introduce Rob Edwards to you.
Welcome, Mr. Edwards. Please introduce yourself for the tape.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Rob Edwards. I am from Winthrop. I am a city councilman there. I'm also the chairman of the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Coalition. I want to thank Senator Sharon. I want to thank you for your time as well, senators, and your hospitality this morning. Thank you for us coming, allowing us to come before you and speak about our project. I'm also here this morning with Mark Wegner, the operator of TCW, the train operator on our rail. A packet was handed out to you. There's Mark. A packet was handed out to you, and it's got a lot of information, and you can read that later at your leisure. Basically, the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Line is 94 miles of line stretching from Norwood, Young America, to Hanley Falls. Products currently moved on the rail are primarily related to agriculture and manufacturing. The current maximum speed of the rail is 10 miles an hour. Efforts are being made to upgrade the rail to allow for 25-mile-an-hour operation. These upgrades will allow both the MPL itself and the shippers located on the line to be more effective and competitive. Rail operations generated $3.2 million in output in the study area economy in 2008. Rail operations also created 21 full-time or part-time jobs and $1.4 million in labor income. If the rail were to cease to exist, output, employment, and labor income in the study area economy would decline by these amounts. Again, what I'm reading from is the conclusion page of the economic impact analysis that we just had completed by the U of M, and you've got that in your packet. So these numbers are backed up in depth and detail in that packet. Shippers who rely on the railroad contributed $302 million in output sales to the study area economy from goods shipped on the rail line in 2008. The creation of this output led to 671 full or part-time jobs and $28 million in labor income in the economy. If the rail were to cease to exist, these goods may continue to be produced, but at a lower profit margin. The resulting lower profit margins could jeopardize the long-term viability of those businesses or affect their decisions related to expansion. Estimates indicate that the loss of the rail line would lead to a drop in revenues of $4.9 million and a decline in profits of at least $3.5 million per year in the study area. Further upgrades to the rail would allow for increased profitability of the shippers. The total overall economic impact in 2008, and this is just a snapshot of 2008, to the overall state of Minnesota was $328 million. We're asking to upgrade this rail from its 110 to 125-year-old status of 110-pound rail. And, Mark, did you bring the rail? To give you an example, if you want to you can set it on the table. If you've got, you
carefully. Need a little help?
This is a cross-section of the rail as we have it and of the rail that we're looking to improve upon. And the state rail study, I know if it's not yet completely finalized or is coming, does state in there that there is a minimum 286 is what they're going to recommend for all parts of Minnesota. This is our current line. We do have some dated back to the late 1800s, still in the ground, still being used. It's fragile. It's brittle. This is what we want to go to. It will get us to higher speeds and more capacity. Currently, we can only pull 30 rail cars at a maximum of 10 miles an hour. This will get us up to, up to 25 miles an hour and a full unit train, 110 cars. Obviously, that improves the economy. Obviously, that improves the businesses and the availability of jobs in our region. That's why we're here to ask you to continue to help us fund a project you've already committed to in the past. Our senators in Washington and our representatives in Washington have also committed monies to this, and we appreciate your help in the past. Help us continue to rehabilitate this line the whole 94 miles. Thank you.
Completes our presentation, although we will stand for any questions anybody would have.
Questions from the committee. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Senator Sharon.
Here's your mic.
Thanks. That's what experience gets you.
Senator Sharon, how much federal money is committed to this?
Bruce has that.
How much has been committed so far?
This is Bruce
Or
Pinsky.
What's committed right now?
Mr. Chairman, yes. How much has been committed currently, and how much is going to come in the future?
Mr. Chair, I'd have Mr. Pinsky answer the question.
Mr. There's Pinsky, been about,
Mr. Pinsky, please introduce yourself
dollars.
Formally for the record.
Bruce Pinsky, Arlington, Minnesota.
Thank you.
Approximately $20 million committed. There's a bid that was just let Friday for $7.5 million for work to be done this spring. But in total, about $20 million. I believe it's the whole thing with the bridges is going to take $80, $90 million to go the 94 miles.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our first goal is Winthrop, where most of the ethanol comes from.
So if we had all the money in the world, how fast would we like to go along this line? 25 miles an hour still seems pretty slow.
It seems slow, but it's a 94-mile line. Uh-huh. A 24-mile an hour with bigger unit trains uh-huh. will be plenty speed for this line okay. for the foreseeable future. We'll probably be dead before it needs to be faster than that.
This rail has been in existence for 125 years. It has not been in continual operation because of the state of disrepair of the rail. What we're asking to is to get it back up because we do realize of the economic importance that it has to our region. And we're proving that now. I think 8,500 car loads were shipped last year. Just in 3 years alone, 2005, 6, and 7, because of the rail's operation, we were able to displaced 86,000 semis off the roads in Minnesota. So it's a good investment. We ask you to please work with us to continue the work that you've joined with us in the past to complete.
Thank you. Mr. Pinsky.
I'd like to make just one point. I don't know if it's in the packet clear to you, but this line is a government entity. Basically, it's owned by the five counties. There's no individual interest in this line whatsoever.
Thank you. Anything further, Senator Sharon?
Well, I just would like to emphasize that these kinds of projects, rail projects, do so much more for the state. And when the state invests in rail in rural parts of the state that have been economically left behind, where there's been a lot of devolution, it really can create some relief for the whole state by improving the economy. There are some measures in this part of the state in Sibley County that say that the value of homes in this area is 32% lower than the rest of the state. The median income there is 10% lower than it is in the rest of the state. And it is those factors that we're trying to impact by these initiatives. And your continuing partnership to help us upgrade this to 25 miles is part of an overall strategy to improve those indicators in our part of the state.
Great. Thank you very much. We will lay this proposal over for consideration and possible inclusion in our recommendations to the capital investment.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for letting us come in early for
Great.
The drive.
Great, thanks. Senator Steven is next. She's got babysitting issues, so we're going to move her on through. Senator Steven's item is number 22. 21 and 22. We'll take both, Senator Steven. Is that okay?
Mr. Chair, I didn't bring my agenda, so if you could tell me which one that is you want to do first.
Oh, I'm sorry. So we have number
it's 2, three.
Which is Red Rock Corridor Park and Ride, and then number 21, which is Chicago to Twin Cities High-Speed Rail, and 22 is bonding for the Hoffman Yard. We can take those in whatever order you prefer.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we'll start with the Red Rock Corridor, please.
Okay, number 2, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This request is for $500,000 to go to the construction of a park and ride facility for the Red Rock Corridor. Many of the committee members are aware of this line because we have discussed it in numerous committees. It would connect Red Wing to Minneapolis using existing train tracks that would operate very similar to the North Star commuter line, but serve the southeast metropolitan area. And here today to talk about it is the chair of the Red Rock Corridor Commission, Myra Peterson, who's also a Washington County Commissioner,
and Barb Hollenbeck, who serves on that commission and is also a Hastings City Council member.
Commissioner Peterson.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chairman Dibble. I'm Washington County Commissioner Myra Peterson. I'm also chair of the Red Rock Corridor Commission, comprised of local elected officials from local elected officials along the route, the Prairie Island Indian Community, and the Canadian Pacific Railroad. The Red Rock is a 30-mile transportation corridor of regional and national significance that extends from Hastings to the Union Depot in St. Paul and on to Minneapolis. The Red Rock Corridor has seen population growth at the rate more than twice the state average. In the next 20 years, the Southeast metropolitan area is projected to add more than 100,000 new residents. The Red Rock Rail Corridor Commission completed an alternative analysis in 2007 that examined the cost effectiveness and the ridership potential for all types of transit and determined that the commuter rail is the best long-term transit investment in the corridor. Similar to the effects of the North Star Corridor, the commuter coach service will be initially developed to build the ridership base. The transit stations are being designed and built to accommodate commuter coach bus service in the interim and commuter rail service in the future. Improvements to the track capacity and safety upgrades, including lights, crossing gates, additional tracks, are a three-for-one investment. High-speed rail, commuter rail, and freight trains in the corridor. I will now turn it over to Hastings City Council member and downtown business owner Barb Hollenbeck to discuss that request that is before you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Myra. My name is Barb Hollenbeck, and I'm a city council member in the city of Hastings and also sit on the Red Rock Corridor Commission. And the request that you have before you is for the purchase of property design and construction of the park and ride facility in Hastings, along the Red Rock Corridor. The city of Hastings has taken the initial steps to move this project along by securing property in its historic downtown for the construction of the park and ride facility. Extending transit service to Hastings, which will then provide service to the entire 30-mile Red Rock Corridor, is a key component of the city's vision for revitalizing the downtown area and increasing mobility and access to transit for its residents. As a local business owner, providing transit options will increase foot traffic and activity in the downtown core and leading to a stronger local economy and job market. The station area is also ripe for redevelopment, and the park and ride facility will act as a catalyst for future investments in downtown Hastings. And we already had one local business open its doors adjacent to the park and ride facilities with the name of Second Street Depot. So just the idea of park and ride is already spurring business opportunities in the city of Hastings. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Council Member. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, in closing, I'd just add that, as you are aware, the Hastings Bridge is going to begin construction this year. And so it's critical to have some transit options for the residents of Hastings as they deal with the construction. So I'd just add that as a further pitch.
Great, thanks. Questions from the members? Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sieben, if I remember right, the city of Hastings isn't served very well with transit options currently. And that was always, you know, when I represented the community, that was always kind of a bone of contention. Can you tell us what they have currently? And
well, Mr. Chair, this is actually a sore subject because the Met
That's
Council.
That's why I brought it up.
Thanks. Yeah. I'm looking at my friends from the Metropolitan Council. The track service, which Dakota County and the City of Hastings has provided to residents, more as like a commuter, or not really commuter, but a pickup and drop-off service, is being taken over by the Metropolitan Council. So there is significant disruption to the residents of Hastings that's going to occur. But right now, most residents of Hastings drive to the park and ride facility in Cottage Grove if they want to take a bus to get to the Twin Cities because there is no service, regular route service right now within the city of Hastings. So we want to get this park and ride built so that we can help make the case of why the Met Council should serve Hastings in the future.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this matter? Okay. Senator Sieben, we will lay this over for consideration and possible inclusion in our recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee. We have two more for you, Senator Sieben.
Yes. Mr. Chair, we'd next like to talk about the high-speed rail, please.
All right.
Mr. Chair and members, this proposal is for $10 million in bond proceeds to go towards the development of high-speed rail between the Twin Cities, including the Union Depot and Chicago. And again, as you know, Mr. Chair, this has been an issue that we've been working on previously and I think has really been advanced with the development of the state's rail plan. And for members who haven't been following that as carefully or as closely, the state rail plan is just coming out with a draft and it will be finalized in the coming weeks. But one thing that it has been made clear is that a priority for the state for the development of obviously not just this corridor, the Red Rock corridor, but for many other corridors across the state of Minnesota, is that we need as soon as possible connection to the to Chicago. Minnesota needs to be connected to Chicago to increase the ridership for many other lines, whether it be North Star or the Northern Lights or service to Rochester. So I purposely drafted this bill in the least controversial way I could come up with so that it does not designate a specific route, as you'll notice. Instead, we're making the case that, as you know, we were able to secure $26 million in the previous year to go to the state's rail development. But this is specifically for $10 million additional, which we anticipate we will need very soon to continue down that path of connecting Chicago to the Twin Cities. So, again, Commissioner Peterson has been working on this for a lot longer than I have and can add some more comments.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Senator Dibble and senators. I am here to testify in favor of the high-speed rail corridor. It was 1998 that the federal government designated this as an important corridor. And we have put together a joint powers board that takes all of the counties and cities along the route from Winona all the way up to St. Paul and on to Minneapolis. We have also been entering into discussion with the cities of Eau Claire, and they have Steve O'Malley is the, I can't remember what he is, his title, but I believe he's the county administrator from that county. And they are working with us, and we're planning joint meetings. So this is really a broad-based effort of the communities along this corridor, and we have no opposition that we know of, and we see nothing but bright future ahead for us. The line is designated to go for 110 miles an hour. That's the investment that's being made across the United States. But I would encourage you to start investing in high-speed rail. If I look at China, they're spending $51 billion a year. Billion, not million. Billion dollars a year to bring high-speed rail to China. Our state has to invest in this. It is jobs. It is connectivity. It is an investment in our future. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions from the council member? Are we going to speak?
I'm just in support of the high-speed rail also. Okay. As Myra talked earlier, investing in high-speed rail also brings us commuter rail and increased capacity in freight rail. So we are definitely in favor of supporting this bill.
Questions from the members? Would anyone else like to? Oh, Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, my only comment is along that last comment, is this a three-for-one deal here? You know, the money that we spend here today is going to help three different projects all reach their goal. And, you know, not just because I'm kind of at the red dot at the end of this line, but, you know, three-for-one.
Three-for, all right.
Better investment could happen.
Patrick.
So, yeah.
All right. Senator Seaman.
Mr. Chair, just a broader policy discussion I think that's worth having in either this subcommittee or in Senator Murphy's committee is that while we certainly need to make the connection to the Twin Cities from Chicago, I think it's also important to talk about how we link Minneapolis more closely with St. Paul. So whether it be the expansion of North Star, I know there's a proposal on our agenda to link it to St. Cloud. I think it's also important for the state to talk about how we connect to the East Metro area because, as we've seen in the development of transit across the state, that it has been heavily focused on the West Metro recently. So it doesn't relate specifically to this bill, but again, any investment that we can make in that in the existing corridor between St. Paul and Minneapolis will serve multiple purposes, not just high-speed rail, but also commuter rail.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly, and you have a strong partner in me, Senator Seaman, on that.
I know. Thank you.
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, just a comment. While I would rather see us be the best in the world and get up over 300 miles an hour with high-speed rail, I did want to bring news that our aviation friends are in favor of 110 miles an hour because you're still not competing with airplanes.
Well, we were going to take a look at the rail plan in this in the larger committee or in this, I don't know where, but we're going to look at the rail plan in here soon, and we'll have that discussion as well. So Senator Ressa, she's going to bring the rail plan forward. So, okay, anyone else in the room would like to talk? Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that brings us to the Hoffman Yard, which is a good segue because this is also a project that has a lot of different ramifications. And I did talk to the railroads here yesterday, and the ones that are involved in that area are excited.
Mr. Chair, so with that, the Hoffman Yard bill, that proposal that's before you, is came out of the draft of the state rail plan where it identified the Hoffman Yard as the Hoffman Junction as, and I'm reading straight from the draft rail plan. It's one of the current major bottlenecks in the state of Minnesota, and it's actually one of the major bottlenecks in the entire United States. So there are three of the four Class 1 railroads who operate in Minnesota have facilities in the Hoffman Junction. So this proposal would bring some relief to the certainly to the railroads, and you'll see a letter of support in your packets from CP regarding this, but it also is an area of our state rail infrastructure that, regardless of what high-speed rail line is developed, this yard is going to need to see upgrades, similar to what MnDOT is making in the Northwest Metro through their Tiger Grant Fund application, I believe that's right, in Coon Rapids. This also needs significant improvements to serve the statewide rail system. So here joining me to testify about the bill is Jan Parker, Ramsey County Commissioner, and Mike Rogers from the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority.
Commissioner Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Well, it's a real pleasure to come before you today. This is such an exciting time for transit in Minnesota. I mean, you folks are at a point that really taking us to the next level, which is very exciting. The Hoffman Interlocking Yard is located just to the east of downtown St. Paul between I-94 and the Lower Afton Road. As Senator Seaman said, it is home to several different rail lines. There are about 50 different freight movements a day going through the yards, in addition to the movements within the yard itself. The improvements to this system is another three for one. We just heard that term used. This is a three for one benefit. It will not only help the existing freight lines that are located there, but it will provide the infrastructure changes that will allow for high-speed rail and commuter rail to go through this area as well. This is a currently the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority has hired a consultant who is studying what improvements are needed in the area. This is currently going on, and this $13.5 million will be to fund the actual implementation of those capacity improvements that will be required. We're very excited about this. As I said, it will be a three-for-one, allowing for important improvements to make ready for high-speed rail, commuter rail, as well as the freight that is using the Hoffman Yards at this time. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner. Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Rogers again with the Ramsey County Rail Authority. And I think that Senator Sieben and Commissioner Parker covered basically anything and everything you need to know, except one item I wanted to make clear to the committee, and that because of those three Class 1 railroads being Burlington Northern, Santa Fe, Canadian Pacific, and Union Pacific, all converging in the Hoffman area, you have 5% of the nation's freight volume that moves through that junction. So improvements there are not only critical to get passenger and high-speed rail through, but it also has a major impact on the ability of the economic vitality of businesses in this area as they move their products over the freight lines.
Ms. Rogers, I think you should repeat that fact. What percent of all freight movement in the
5%
country? 5%. I don't know if people – I didn't realize that until I read this fact sheet. That's astonishing. I'm reminded of Chairman Oberstar. We've talked about this before, who talks about – how long it takes to get freight from, you know, the port of Los Angeles, Long Beach, and the ports along the West Coast to Chicago. And once it gets to Chicago, it takes just as long to get through Chicago and out the other side. Sounds like a similar circumstance here with trying to move 5% of the nation's freight through this choke point, while at the same time we're envisioning commuter and high-speed rail going through the very same spot. So sounds like economic development and jobs to me. Anything else? Any members, any questions or comments? Would anyone, Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm just studying this map, trying to identify its location. There is a yellow line there, but is it a fairly wide area that allows pull off sidings, that kind of thing?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, it does. There's some pinch points in it, but the vast majority is already a significant amount of double tracking and a lot of sidings and yard track that goes through. So it's more of an idea of how do we make sure we maintain that freight capacity, knowing that they've got to grow, in addition to providing the capacity to get passenger trains through there so they can go through at a high rate of speed to get that travel time advantage.
So, Mr. Chairman, no. are these rails using common rail then at some of these points, or does each of these railroads have their own rail going through the area so that you've got a sequence and you're trying to add capacity for each of them or to – I'm not sure I totally got that.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the Burlington Northern and Canadian Pacific, both of those railroads have one main track that they essentially use as a double main line. So Burlington Northern controls the dispatching. Both trains run on it. Union Pacific has capacity or trackage rights to run on their track through areas where Union Pacific does not have track. It's a mix of track specifically owned by one railroad and a mix of track owned by one railroad with everybody having operating rights over it. So
that's
as you
fine.
Go in and out of the yards and cross, for instance, just by the Union Depot, there's a Y just to the east of the Union Depot. One leg of the Y is owned by Burlington Northern's track. One is by Union Pacific track, and the other is by Canadian Pacific's track. So there's an intermixing of all these railroads, which gets at the capacity issues because they don't have they're always crossing over each other. And when you start to move large trains at slower speeds across everybody else's track, you stop all of their traffic at the same time.
So Mr. Chair, your the goal will be to separate them so that they can each travel efficiently through that area?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the goal of our study is to work with the railroads to identify improvements that they believe will address the capacity constraints. That could include grade separation. It could include additional mainline tracks with faster crossing. So where you may only be able to cross at 10 miles an hour today, you improve the track infrastructure there so you can go through it at 30 miles an hour. That'll help clear those things up. So it's not a guarantee that it's a grade separation, though it is an option.
So, Mr. Chairman, and sir, is there, so it's going to take $13.5 million to study this?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no. The study right now is a $2 million study. That will identify the improvements that will be built with $13.5 million as a starting point from the state. We're also going to be requesting federal money to go into this, too. So the number out of the state rail plan is $54 million for the total cost. So we're coming in with a starting point. We're going to go to the federal government and request money.
Yes, Senator Olson, $13 million is putting stuff in the ground. Doing actual stuff.
Yeah.
Not writing things down.
I just wanted to clarify it.
Mr. Chair, can I clarify that the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority has funded the study? This is not for the study.
All right. All right. Anything else from anyone?
Ramsey.
I think we're wrapped up here. All right. All right. Thank you, Senator Stephen. We'll also lay this
for
on.
Accommodating my for, schedule issues, too.
Possible inclusion. I think we're going to call on Senator Lori next, who's going to be presenting for Senator Pretner Solon on Northern Lights Express, which is number 12 on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, I am here on behalf of Senator Pretner Solon, but I am glad to be a co-author on this really important project. This is the Northern Lights Express high-speed rail proposal to provide high-speed rail, passenger rail from Minneapolis to Duluth with stops in Coon Rapids, Cambridge, and Hinckley. It would be a 110-mile-an-hour train that would actually beat a car by 25 minutes, which is a really critical point in making these things actually feasible. In fact, the feasibility study for this line was completed in December of 2007. We've been working with a consortium of groups all the way along this, I think, 115-mile corridor, counties, cities, 155-mile corridor. We've had the buy-in of the state in the past. We're currently operating under a $500,000 appropriation from Congress to complete Federal Railroad Administration required plans. This is a $13 million request. $3 million of it would be used for engineering and administration and completion of the Federal Rail Authority required plans. And then the balance, $10 million balance, would be a partial match for $492 million of additional federal funding. I should also note that in the MnDOT unveiled state rail plan, the preliminary plan, this was one of the top two corridors recommended for submittal to the High-Speed Rail Authority for federal financing. So this is a high-priority project, and with me here today to give you more details are Bob Manzolini, the Executive Director of the Northern Lights Alliance, and Dan Earhart, Anoka County Commissioner.
Thanks. Who's going to start? Commissioner Earhart.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. Thank you. And Senators, here I'm back, and I wear a couple of different hats. I'm Dan Earhart. I'm Noak County Commissioner, Chair of our Rail Authority. As I mentioned before, I'm Chair of the North Star, but I also am Vice Chair of the Northern Lights Express, and that is the Duluth-Minneapolis rail line. And today, I just to begin with, as the senator said, this is a $13 million request, and he kind of outlined what that would be used for. And I just want to mention that Northern Lights Express Passenger Rail is further along than any of the other projects in the state that are pursuing FRA money. It's the Federal Rail Administration money. And, in fact, we have already received about $2 million in grants over the last couple of years. And I think it should be pointed out, and it's important, that the Northern Lights Express is consistent with the proposed state rail plan that is underway and being finalized and completed now. We also are consistent with that the national committee that it was chaired by the former Secretary of Transportation and traveled throughout the United States. They identified 8 passenger rail projects, and the Northern Lights Express, the Duluth Minneapolis rail line, was one of the 8 that they said should be completed and in with high priority. This $3 million would complete the 5 what we call FRA required plans. There's several topics that have to be completed in the way to, on the way to receiving federal money, and that would complete those. And then that $3 million, the other $10 million, then would be used for matching federal money, the $492 million that the senator mentioned. And we believe that with your continued support, we can have NLX under construction by 2012, and the completion could be done approximately 2014. And upon that completion, we would have approximately 500 rail connects in the or at the Minneapolis interchange. I mean, that's part of the system that we're looking at, and this would be an integral part of it, as well as North Star, well as Hiawatha, well as Central Corridor, and other rail lines coming together. But upon that completion, there could be up to 500 rail stops by that time. But I would like to have Bob Manzoline, who is the executive director of the Alliance, talk to you a little bit more about the project and what we're doing, and certainly I'm available for questions. Thank you, Senators.
Mr. Chairman and members, Bob Manzoline with the St. Louis and Lake County Rail Authority directing the NLX project. And these two covered just about most of everything, but in your handout today, on page 1, I'd like to make a distinction. And if you leave here with one understanding today, is that this is a Federal Rail Administration project referred to as FRA. It's funded separately and differently than I think a lot of the projects you might hear about and have heard testimony about today, and that's the FTA, Federal Transit Administration, who administers commuter lines, light rail lines, bus and transit, and those types of things. There's a real distinction there, and we're following the FRA manual or guidance, development guidance plan for this project and other intercity or high-speed rail projects you might hear about. And this manual is fairly straightforward and simple. The work is complex, but how the work progresses is spelled out. It's determined, and we don't vary much from what the Federal Rail Administration requires. And part of what we're requesting in our bond request is $3 million to complete components of that Federal Rail plan. Further, just also with that plan, in the state passenger rail and freight plan, it just was complete and is in draft form now looking at adoption. You also see that same criteria listed in the state rail plan. We are about midway through this process. We've completed our comprehensive feasibility studies. We've completed our modeling work on the line. We're kind of midway into the point where we can launch the project. As Commissioner Earhart mentioned, 2012 is our date we're shooting for construction. And in the meantime, we have a lot of work to do. We need the money to conduct those pieces of work. Plans, not planning. They're planning effort. Plans that need to be worked on and conducted again in accordance with FRA.
Thank you, Mr. Manzoline. Questions from the committee? Right. Would anyone else like to speak on this matter? Thank you, Senator Laurie. We will lay this request over for possible inclusion in our recommendations to the Capital Investments Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Senator Pogamiller. So just to let folks and senators know, I were jumping around, lots of people have lots of pressure on their own schedules, and folks are also trying to travel quite a distance in this bad weather, so we're trying to accommodate requests and information as they come up to the chair. So thought you were going to, we were going to come in some sort of order on the agenda. My apologies, we just have to jump around in deference to reality. Senator Pogemiller, item number 16.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. This is a bridge, Northtown Rail Yard Bridge. The state has already, in last year's bonding bill, put $600,000 into this. It's a 83-year-old bridge, fracture critical. It's in northeast Minneapolis, actually very close to my parents' home. And it's a current bridge. It's owned by Burlington Northern, cared for by the city. The new bridge would be owned and cared for entirely by Minneapolis. The request is for $7 million for design and construction. The total project is $27 to $33 million. And it's, I believe this might be the highest priority for the city, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct, Senator.
And city engineer, Mr. Yuzna, is here to answer any questions. I think you're familiar with the project and the handout. The design, I guess, perhaps has already been chosen. I, in my local neighborhood newspaper, it came out the other day, and I don't know why we'd have to bond for it. It looks like it's already built. It's done so well here. But
magic of new technology. Yes.
I don't know if, is this picture in the?
Yes, it
oh,
is.
Oh, okay. So
there is.
I don't know if they want to go through this or what. So why don't we just.
We can do very quickly.
Yeah, I think that would be a good information to share and explain. Mr. Yuzna, welcome to the committee. Nice to see you. I used to work with Mr. Yuzna when I worked at the city of Minneapolis. So. Please introduce yourself, though, formally for the record.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Madam Chairman, I'm Jack Hughes, and I'm the bridge engineer for the city of Minneapolis, and I'm here, as Senator Bogemiller noted, to present the Northtown Yard Bridge Replacement Project. The second and third pages just give you a general vicinity map and then a little bit of a topographic map showing the crossing. The earlier projects were focused on rail, and this project actually has a great deal of rail connection to it. There's two items worth note. The Northtown Yard, the Burlington Northern Santa Fe's Northtown Yard, is one of their top five nodes for passing freight through their system. So in general terms, you could say that 20% of the Burlington Northern's freight passes through this yard. Currently, it's a 83-year-old five-span Warren Truss bridge that is fracture critical and has a sufficiency rating of 13% or 13 out of 100. It's fair. It's load rated for, and it's also vertically restricted and signed against large traffics. It also carries the Grand Rounds National Scenic Byway as part of the St. Anthony Parkway in the Minneapolis Park Board system. The facility doesn't have any bicycle facilities at this time, and this is one of the things we are seeking to remedy in this with this replacement. The other item of note, if we go to the background, is the current users, is there are a local bus route, as noted, fractures critical. We've been developing this project for 15 years. In the last 10, we've done extensive studies. We have completed concept of development. We have selected the most economical, the best benefit-cost ratio solution, which is a cable-stayed bridge. The cost of the bridge is higher than we'd normally anticipate, and this is due to the location of the bridge. It passes over the Northtown Yard. Erection of the bridge is quite expensive. In fact, removal of the bridge is quite expensive due to to coordinating with the freight that will have to continue to pass under it. I noted the existing bridge conditions on the fifth page. There is both load and vertical clearance restrictions. The pedestrian facilities are substandard. There are no existing bicycle facilities. Another note, the Northern Lights Express project contacted us during our project development and noted that for the project, for their project, they needed an additional span and increase to our project to allow for a third main line to come through. We've incorporated that into our design. It can be achieved. There's an additional cost that isn't being included in our $7 million request. That it has about a $2.5 million construction cost associated with it. But we have developed it. It is coordinated. The project purpose on the sixth page, obviously, is to replace the fracture critical crossing, remove the vehicular load and clearance restrictions, provide ADA-compliant PED and new bike facilities. We did select the best benefit-cost ratio, and we are intending, obviously, to meet all current highway and railroad standards. As you can see on page 7, the cross sections currently, we just have a cantilevered 6-foot walkway on the south side. We're not actually needing to increase the number of lanes or widen the roadway. The current bridge geometry is adequate to meet all the heavy freight that passes over it. What we're looking to and what we sought in our solicitation, I should note that we did make a solicitation for safety low bridge funds and received $8 million, and that included the inclusion of a bike path on the south side and a sidewalk on the north side. Those are the major increases. If you go to page 8, it's the renderings that Senator Pogemiller noted. It's the daylight rendering with a cable stayed and an evening rendering with some accent lighting of the proposed bridge. This is what was selected. Page 9, we had quite a bit of involvement with the community. We worked with the community for a year to discuss the alternatives, and they selected the cable stay, which is the most economical, as the preferred alternative. We have letter supports from numerous different projects and communities. And finally, the last page is our funding schedule. We're looking at approximately $24 million construction cost. As I noted, we have $8 million of federal fund identified, secured to date, $3 million of local, $4 million of local. As Senator Pogemiller noted, we received $600,000 last year to help with the acquisition of property and to develop the preliminary design and begin final design, which we are starting soon. We're seeking $7 million of state bonds. Burlington Northern, we're anticipating approximately $1 million contribution from them towards the project. And then there was about $2.5 million of construction cost, $500,000 of delivery cost for, and some right-of-way costs and design costs from the Northern Lights projects to help with that expansion of the span. We are entering in final design this year. We're shooting to advertise the bridge a year from now and begin construction in 2011 and final complete construction in 2012. That's my
thank you, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, it's not quite clear to me. Are you going to take down the old bridge and replace it, or run it in a slightly? You talked about acquiring further right of way, or are you realigning it in some way so that traffic would continue while you were building?
Senator Olson,
what's happening there?
Going to take down the old bridge. The crossing will be closed for the 2-year period. It's be even quite a bit more expensive and not cost effective to try to keep traffic rolling across it during construction. Okay. The old bridge would have to be removed. It's actually quite a daunting task to take it down. It's very difficult to do it within the geometries of all the freight moving through it. So it'll be removed and replaced in its current alignment.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Usna, you may have already said this, and if so, I apologize, but what is the contribution, or is Burlington Northern a partner in this? Are they contributing?
Senator Bonif, they are contributing. I'm anticipating approximately $1 million. We have finalized our negotiations. In fact, we have just started our negotiations, just their contribution. Normal practice is they contribute towards the design. I'm seeking additional funding beyond
Senator
that.
Senator Bonif, there's a schedule on the back page of the slides.
Thank you.
One of the engineering things that's happening here, I think you've got four, Mr. Chairman, members, you have four. If you look at the old bridge, you have four concrete pillars. I don't know what
piers.
And they're going to take it down to one, basically. And I presume that has pretty significant, for the railroad yard, that's a big deal, safety and other things.
Anything further from the committee? Anything further from anyone else in the room who'd like to speak on? Oh, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, on the, as you look at one of the maps, it looks like the rail yard is actually to the north of it, or at least much more expansive. But is that actually the rail yard continuing down under St. Anthony Parkway rather than just the regular tracks?
You're looking at the photograph, satellite
photo
on page 3.
Well, it would be 3, I guess, the aerial.
Senator Olson, there's the Northtown Yard is the area principally to the south of that. There's also track build out to the north that's partially Burlington Northern, partially Canadian Pacific.
So
it's in the entire, I would say this is probably a cataracts in the entire yard. So it's a kind of a hourglass pinch point in the yard, but it still crosses quite a few, you know, that reduces the number of all total tracks. But there's, at this point, there was approximately 24 tracks at one time. They have removed one.
So Mr. Chair, is it Mr. Elwood, is it?
Usna.
Yep. Jack Usna, ma'am.
Sorry. That there are 24 tracks underneath this bridge?
That's correct.
Why don't I see that? Up to the north, it looks like there's 24 tracks across here, but not.
Yeah, it's hard to tell at this scale, but there have been a couple that have been. One that was removed that actually facilitated getting the pier location. But there's a lot. It's difficult to see at this scale, but there's quite a few tracks. We did do a layout that gets to great, more accurate detailing. But when you look, there's 5 spans out there of over 100 feet per span. Yes. You figure about 20 feet between centers of tracks. It starts. There's quite a few tracks out there.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Senator Pogemiller, we will lay this over for consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for public purposes, I want to mention that I'm going to miss the old bridge if we do it. I grew up a block and a half from here. I'm on the map. My home is on the map. And we spent a lot of time, I suppose, for public purpose, adjacent to the railroad yard.
Not breaking any federal laws.
Not breaking any federal
laws.
But
kids in the future, you know, will be able to ride their
don't
bikes.
Don't hop trains. Don't do what those people used to do.
Kids will have a place to go with the bike path along that span.
Thank you, members. Thanks, Jeff.
I'm going to give Senator Dibble a break here for a little while, and we're going to continue to take proposals from people who are not members of the committee, starting with Senator Latz, and then we'll move to Senator Stumpf. Be ready.
So Senator Latz is number 5. Members, this is number 5 on the agenda.
Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm here in support of the Southwest Transitway, the light rail transitway that would originate in Minneapolis, where the confluence of a number of rail lines is already taking place, the Hiawatha Light Rail and the North Star Commuter Rail all come together right around the new Twin Stadium, and the Southwest LRT would connect from there out to Eden Prairie. They have finally reached a conclusion on the locally preferred route, so all the pieces are in place, and the community consensus at every step of that route is present through St. Louis Park and Hopkins and Eden Prairie. I have with me, to provide more detail on the proposal, Hennepin County Commissioner Gail Dorfman and Katie Walker, the staff director of the project.
Commissioner, if you'd be brief, we'll welcome your testimony. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Gail Dorfman, Hennepin County Commissioner, District 3, and Katie Walker has been the Southwest Project Manager since the beginning of this project about a decade ago. Thank you, Senator Letts, and members of the committee for your support for a $5 million bonding request for Southwest last year. We are back seeking additional $7 million to continue our work on environmental and engineering as we move into the year. Let me just give you a very quick update on where we are. Senator Letts mentioned the neighborhood consensus. We had a series of well-attended public hearings last year. More than 350 people gave comments on the route. While not everyone agreed on the best alignment, everyone said yes to Southwest LRT. So we have moved forward with our analysis. We have finished the alternatives analysis phase and are close to finishing the draft environmental impact statement. And there has been unanimous support from the cities. In addition, as we selected the locally preferred alignment based on the data and the analysis and ridership numbers and costs, it was very clear that there was one clearly viable alignment that met FTA requirements, as well as we think competes really well with the new FTA standards that are going to be promulgated later this year. And so we are moving forward with this LPA. There was a unanimous vote of the county board sitting as our rail authority for this LPA. All six cities that have been involved in this project have passed resolutions of support for the LPA, five of them with unanimous votes, and in the city of Minneapolis, only one council member voted against the LPA. We are moving forward to transition this project to the Metropolitan Council. The council has a schedule this year, which they began yesterday, to consider the LPA and amending the transportation policy plan, which we think will be, and according to their schedule, will be done in May, and then we will apply for new starts. And so we are moving forward and are very excited about this and continue to do a lot of outreach with the neighborhoods as we figure out how we can make this work for the neighborhoods it passes through.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Do you have anything to add? Just stand ready for questions. Are there questions or comments for Senator Letts or Commissioner Dorfman? Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, briefly, Commissioner and Ms. Walker, I just want to acknowledge you for the tremendous work you did. You know, this is really a poster child for getting the community on board so that there isn't dissension and problems down the road. And it's no surprise that we have moved so quickly, given that building consensus work that you've done for 2 years before you're even sitting here, or three or four. I don't know how long, but it's really been a wonderful example. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bob. I will say not only has the community been involved, but the business community as well. There are more than 200,000 jobs along this corridor, and the business community has been a strong advocate.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Chair. Senator Olson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, can you tell me how many of the major arterial or major collector streets that they have to have grade crossings?
I'll turn this over to Katie Walker for that.
Thank Ms. Walker, please identify yourself for the record.
Katie Walker, Hennepin County Southwest LRT Project Manager. Madam Chair and Senator, I believe on this alignment we have between 15 to 20 at-grade crossings. We do have assumed five grade-separated crossings over major roadways.
Five?
Like Interstate 494, two crossings of Trunk Highway 62 and Trunk Highway 212, and Excelsior Boulevard.
Excelsior Boulevard has a separated?
Yes, we assume a grade-separated crossing at Excelsior Boulevard.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Lentz. Commissioner, Ms. Walker, is anyone else who wants to speak on this issue? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to also commend the, everyone for all of their hard work. There's still some work to be done yet, of course, in the Minneapolis neighborhoods. Some concern, of course, about mitigation on the impacts, both on the residential as well as the natural and recreational amenities in that stretch between Cedar Lake and Lake of the Isles on up into downtown. But we continue to work very hard on that, as well as how to tie in from a transportation perspective, you know, the balance of Southwest Minneapolis, ideally across the 29th Street corridor.
And so, Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, in addition to the important environmental work we're doing with the community, we're also working to do station area planning at all the key stations, also including the cities and the community.
Thank you very much.
And Madam Chair,
we really do need to move on.
Just
Senator
one quick
Olson.
Question of Senator Dibble.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, in that Minneapolis, is that following that kind of that old rail bed corridor in that last segment?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, most likely. Lots of discussion and planning to take into consideration.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Stumpf. Senator Stumpf dealing with Thief River Falls Airport, and then we will move to the, three bills of Senator Pappas. And then I'll go in order for members who are not members of the committee, which I think then the next after Pappas's bills will be Senator Torres-Ray. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. The Thief River Falls Regional Airport is asking for help from the state to expand or to put a new hangar located on the airport. The reason for the hangar is basically Thief River Falls Airport is a very busy airport. They handle more cargo and packages and parcels than any other airport in Minnesota except Minneapolis-St. Paul. And they, I think last year it was well over, 1.7, 1.8 million parcels that went out. A lot of it is due to a company that has developed relatively recently. I think they started in about 1990, a company called DigiKey. And it's an international company. They ship to, I think, about 140 countries. And they have a workforce, I think, around 2,000 people. And if you get the Thief River Falls paper, you would almost on a weekly basis, you can open up the paper and look at the ads, and there's an ad for help wanted from DigiKey because they are a growing company. And what has happened is that they fill orders to deliver, and they have prided themselves in that delivery system. So they have next-day delivery any place in Canada and the United States, two-day delivery to Europe, and three-day delivery to Southeast Asia. So basically they cover the world in a kind of a service, tailored service delivery of I suppose the best way to describe it is computer components, computer-related components. They have over 500,000 pieces, different parts that they put together. And what is fascinating about it is that if you look at where those components that they purchase from to repackage and mail back out, a lot of them come from the Southeast Asian area. They buy from Panasonic, and they buy from a lot of those companies located over in Southeast Asia. They have taken market share away from Panasonic in over the last few years because of that tailored service. So if you call into that company, and that order will go out this evening, let's say 8:30. If that order is called in by 8 or 8:30, that you'll get it tomorrow. And that's what companies want. They want on They don't want to hold inventory. So they're continuing to grow, and there's no facility at the airport. So if you physically go out there in the evening, you will actually see a long parade of UPS trucks and coming to the airport to shift the parcels that they're hauling in and reloading them on planes. And that's all done outside. And so the company is expanding, and they're moving actually both companies, the UPS and FedEx companies want to expand to larger planes, and DigiKey wants to expand because they're growing and they're shipping more and more parcels. So the city, who currently owns the airport, has to either expand, and the fear on the part of many of us is that if you go 50 miles to the west, they can have a heated facility provided to them by the state of North Dakota at the Grand Forks Air Base, or Grand Forks Airport. So what we would like is to have a facility that they can these trucks can back in and unload, and the basic concept is that it'll all be palletized. All the parcels will be loaded, unloaded into this hangar, and then those parcels will be reloaded on a container in the airplanes. And so we need this hangar, and in order to continue this growth of this company.
Senator Stump, I have a question. You may have covered this in your opening remarks, but it indicates that you're looking for an equal amount committed from non-state sources. What do you anticipate that being?
Madam Chair,
federal and money or and, private or from the city? Where were you looking for that those dollars to come from for the match?
You know, Madam Chair, I think there has been an updated draft of this bill, and I think that I don't have it right now.
Okay.
But
that's fine.
I apologize for that.
Make sure that we get it, because we are going to be evaluating these proposals in terms of ranking them and moving them on to the full committee. And I think it'd be helpful to call one of us and just tell us what change you made on the proposal, so we can let members know.
Madam Chair, and I think also when the Senate Capital Investment Committee was in Thief River Falls and listening to this presentation, the size of the hangar originally, I think, was like 100 by 150 feet. And there was some question on the part of Senator Langseth and others and the CEO of DigiKey that in a period of a few years, UPS and FedEx were going to move their airplanes from the ones that they're currently using, which I think are Falcon 20s, to 757s. And so there had to be a little more, a little larger hangar, and I think the more current one is 110 by 180 feet. And so I need to get this updated draft to you.
Thank you very much, Senator Stump. Any questions for Senator Stump? Anyone want to speak on the issue? Seeing none, thank you very much, Senator Pappas. Senator Pappas has three proposals before us, one on St. Paul streetscaping, one on the I-94 bicycle and pedestrian bridge replacement, and one for the Union Depot. Senator Pappas, which one do you want to
I'll take the streetscaping one first.
Streetscaping first? Okay.
Yeah.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chairman.
Before you begin, we have an hour left. We have 18 bills.
And, this is a $10 million request.
I do appreciate the patience of people, but We will hear all the bills, but those near the end are going to get about 30 seconds.
And, Madam Chair, I certainly enjoyed sitting at the table with you all listening to bills for the last hour. This is a $10 million request for streetscaping and public infrastructure.
What? Senator Pappas.
I did. I wish I was on the Transportation Committee. I miss it.
I have waited in many committees for a long time to have my bills heard, and I have done so patiently.
Go ahead.
This is a $10 million request for streetscaping and public infrastructure along the University Avenue and downtown St. Paul Central Corridor, light rail line. The funds would help offset the financial burden on the city and local businesses that's going to occur during the construction of the Central Corridor Light Rail Project. Especially we have concerns from our Asian business owners over disruption during construction and the loss of parking. We have the Black community that's also very concerned about not enough stations. And so we think that we really could use the help from the state in mitigating some of these concerns. I have with me a city council member, Mr. Russ Stark, and also Mr. Mike Baca from, he's a University Avenue business owner. Go ahead, council member.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. Russ Stark, St. Paul City Council member. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm here to talk about Senator Pappas's bill for the $10 million for bonds for infrastructure and streetscape improvements along Central Corridor. I first want to thank you and the legislature in general for being such great partners in this project to date. The billion-dollar investment that we're all getting ready to make is going to have a huge impact on our city and on our region, one of the biggest infrastructure projects ever in the state. Through a combination of those city, county, state, and federal resources, we'll soon realize the benefits of this investment in the form of jobs, economic development, increased mobility, improved air quality, and overall more livable community. The project budget itself hasn't been able to accommodate some of the improvements that we're here to talk about today as a result of, you know, federal standards and just tight budgets overall. And the city and the community believe strongly that these additional improvements are needed in order to attract the type of investment that we believe will be coming to University Avenue and the corridor, and also to make it a more livable place and a great place to conduct business. As a city, we've already committed substantial resources to pay for one additional infill station along the corridor, a portion of the needed streetscape improvements, as well as parking solutions for the lost on-street parking that Senator Pappas mentioned. Making these improvements during construction as opposed to after the fact is by far the most cost-effective way to get this done, and we feel strongly that this will help minimize disruption to the businesses and folks in the community. The one pager that you should have in front of you outlines a $22 million public infrastructure investment the city is working to realize. Given the fact that we've already committed significant resources to get this done, we're requesting that the state help us in improving this important asset to assure that your investment in the rail project realizes a great return in the form of private investment along the line, jobs, housing, and economic development that we all believe will be forthcoming. Thank you so much for your consideration, and I will defer to Mr.
Thank
Baca,
you, Councilmember Stark. Sir, if you want to make a comment.
Sure, I'd love to. My name is Mike Baca. I'm Vice President of Impressive Print. Losing my voice a little, I apologize. We've been on the Avenue for 17 years, and with this whole project, needless to say, all the businesses are very excited. Long term. Short term, it's going to be a huge burden on us as far as loss of parking and everything we've already discussed, but also with other things, assessments that are going to be coming, things like that. It's very important for the city to do this. These are current jobs that are on the Avenue, and I hear a lot of talk about creating jobs. Well, these are already here, and this money would really help keep the jobs here, give us confidence in the city and the state that we can continue to build our businesses, invest in new buildings, and do that type of thing. So I'll keep it short, but I appreciate the
thank
time.
You.
Thank you very much.
Whenever we make these huge improvements and these huge projects, those closest to them, as you just said, long term are going to benefit mightily, but short term, you can get run out of your business because
it's a survival
because of
issue.
Access and so forth. And I know along 394, for example, when that was being converted from Highway 12 to 394, there were a number of businesses near Highway 100 that went out of business because they just could not maintain the traffic into their businesses.
Yeah, so and it's an uneasy feeling, to be very honest. The retail industry is, you know, afraid. So please, eat at all the restaurants there during construction. That'll help.
Are there any questions for Senator Pappas or her witnesses? Is there anyone from the public who wishes to make a comment? Senator Murphy?
Madam Chair, I think that, you know, if there's... I think that there that we need to put a portion of this at least in our recommendations to Senator Langseth. You know, a lot of the things that federal law are changing in regards to this line, and there is going to be more stops designated sooner or later because they're going to reconfigure the way that, you know, all these things are going
to be. Well, Senator Murphy, what Senator Dibble and I have prepared is a list of the projects for that were under the jurisdiction of the two subcommittees for members of the two subcommittees to rank their top five. We can score them. I think there's 13 on one and 20 on another. And then we would present those rankings to the full committee as a way of at least getting members participating in the process and kind of differentiating between those projects they think are the most worthwhile. And not so much just the money, because it might not be all the money that any one project recommends or needs, but that it should be part of the recommendations going forward from the committee.
Madam Chair, I'm just trying to lobby the group here.
Yeah, I understand that.
Madam Chair.
No, everybody gets to vote.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to say quickly that I'm glad an item like this has come to the Transportation Committee, because it's a recognition that transportation is about things larger than the road or the track itself. And certainly we know that those states that are going to benefit from federal priorities that are coming down with the alignment of environmental and development, economic development, and housing priorities with transportation, those states that recognize those alignments are going to benefit.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Olson, yeah, question,
Chair,
comment?
I heard you say, and I see it on here, that you were talking about one additional station from the get-go. Have you made a determination which spot that will be?
Senator Pappas?
I don't know. Do you know? Yes.
Council Member Stark?
There hasn't been an official determination. One of the three stations that's planned has a clear transit benefit in terms of the lack of that station would actually create less service for that area than exists today. And so there's a station that clearly meets the transit need most clearly. Other stations meet other community needs, and so there hasn't been an official decision. What we learned in the last couple of days is that since we have identified the resources to pay for one station, the federal government's going to match that and essentially pay for the second. And so we're just short a very limited number of dollars to put up some money to pay for half of the third that they would then match.
So that might all happen at the
We believe we're going to build all three. Yeah.
Right. And if we got this Senator appropriation, Pappas, it would help us also to pay for that third station.
So, Senator Olson. Madam Chair, it's had a great concern to me that there might not be one at Western, because my favorite restaurant has even, they were considering relocating to Rochester. And I hate to lose my building.
Okay, thank you very much, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam
and
Chair.
And your testifiers, wish you well and success
thank
in
you
your
very
business.
Much.
Thank you. Stark. Senator Pappas, which one next?
Madam Chair, the I-94 bridge.
Okay.
This is a request for $3 million to replace two pedestrian bridges that cross over I-94. When the freeway was built, the historical black neighborhood in St. Paul, the Rondo neighborhood, was really divided in half. These bridges were an effort to provide some continuity for that neighborhood. I mean, you're talking about children couldn't get to school and the playgrounds and visit their grandparents. Family and friends were divided, especially difficult for transit-dependent people because they couldn't get in their car and drive to the nearest, you know, to Snelling or to Lexington or Dale to cross the bridge. So these pedestrian bridges have really served to provide some kind of continuity for that, you know, horribly divided neighborhood. I don't know if this is an issue around the state at all with these pedestrian bridges that get old and need to be replaced, and I'd be interested to find out if that was the case. But this certainly is a problem in St. Paul, and I have Mr. John Masco, the city engineer, here to testify on behalf of the request and about the condition of the bridges.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Matsko. I'm the St. Paul City Engineer, and thank you for allowing me to testify today on behalf of the Senate's file. It's a very straightforward request, as the Senator mentioned. There's six pedestrian bicycle bridges that are west of downtown that cross 94. In December of 2008, MnDOT notified us that they had to remove one of the bridges unexpectedly, immediately, because it was in complete disrepair. And it was deemed not safe. MnDOT, to their credit, demolished the bridge, redesigned it, and constructed it in 10 months and had it back open under a new design by the time school started because it was that important to the community. St. Paul liked to continue replacing the bridges that are on 94. The remaining five were all constructed, same vintage, same time period. The current bridges are not under current design standards, what would be designed today. We're looking to replace similar to what we have on Griggs that was replaced. And we're requesting $3 million to start with two of the bridges at Aldine and McCubbin. The money would go to MnDOT for demolition, design, and construction. Do you have any questions?
Are there any questions or comments on this project? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does $3 million buy you two bridges? I mean, that seems like a real deal. Or is there more money that's being matched?
Mr. Chair, the bridge that was constructed by MnDOT at Griggs was a $1.5 million bridge, including design. Mm-hmm. They did a pretty, really good job with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, quick question.
Senator Bonhoff, do you have a bill before this committee?
Nope.
Oh.
I don't have
one.
Darn it.
Okay.
Thank you. Is MnDOT prepared to work on this project, and is it in their work plan, and if this is approved in the coming months?
We have had conversations with MnDOT, and we believe that if the money is available, they will participate. They have supported us moving forward anyhow.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator, anybody else? Senator Murphy?
Well, Madam Chairman, I think Senator Pappas touched on something that's important here. We need to get an inventory of what state-owned pedestrian bridges are out there because I don't think that we have a good handle on that. I know that talking with MnDOT, there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
That's a good point.
Yeah, maybe there's a way that we can incorporate this into a larger policy where we can use some of our bridge money on these pedestrian bridges as well. And they rank way down the list. We all know why. I mean, pedestrians are not
as important as cars.
It's not as glamorous, maybe.
Little kids on their bikes, biking to school, are pretty crucial.
I realize that, but, you know, they just don't rise to the level of having 130,000 trips like the I-35W bridge.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Thank you, Senator Pappas, sir. The next bill of Senator Pappas's is for the Union Depot, and then we'll go to Senator Torres-Ray. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Coming up to join me is Ramsey County Commissioner Dan Parker and Regional Rail staffer Mike Rogers. This is a request which you've seen before, and it's an incredibly exciting project, and I believe you should all have the handout about the Union Depot. The request is for $8.5 million to fund the redevelopment of the Union Depot, matched with considerable federal funds and local funds, and to transform it into a multimodal hub serving many modes of transportation, high-speed rail to Chicago, Amtrak, Greyhound and Jefferson lines, intercity buses, Central Corridor Light Rail, Metro Transit, other regional buses, bicycle and pedestrian traffic. We once had, this once was our train station. Amtrak operated 200 trains and 20,000 passengers a day, but they moved. They're now at the Midway station. So in the early 2000s, work began on identifying a multimodal hub for St. Paul, and the Union Depot was selected. And Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority did complete acquisition of 33 acres, including the head house and the concourse. Major construction is supposed to begin this year and be completed by 2012, allowing all those entities to move into a modern multimodal hub. The Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority has expended over $45 million of its own funds to date on the project, and has submitted an ARRA request for $135.8 million, and that's how the renovation will be completed. So we would really like state investment. We think that is consistent with the state rail plan and identifying downtown St. Paul Station for intercity and high-speed rail. Ms. Parker.
Parker, if you'll be brief, please.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that Senator Pappas just laid it out very well.
I took her testimony. Sorry.
It's okay.
Someone should have told me.
this is just really an exciting opportunity, and as the Senator said, this is bringing back a jewel of Minnesota that that has been sitting there waiting to have life breathed into it, and we're just really excited about this possibility. And as she said, that there is considerable federal money on the line that we would be able to access, and that this $8.5 million is critical for us to complete this project. Thank you.
We should all go have dinner at Christos to refresh our memories. Yes. About what it looks like.
Sir, did you want to add a comment?
No, I think they covered it. Thank you.
Are there questions? Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Just as I review the map, I would just encourage folks to keep in mind that intercity high-speed rail is going to come to the entire Twin Cities and not just stop in St. Paul. So as we're putting maps on, lines on maps, let's put complete maps together. I don't think Minneapolis would ever,
that
or folks in the Western Metro.
That brown line needs to be.
Oh, the brown line.
I don't think I would dream
bit
of putting out a map that
farther
doesn't include St. Paul in an illustration like this.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, there are two lines on here that go to Minneapolis, but you're right, the brown line should have also continued.
Questions, comments further? Senator Pappas, thank you very much.
Right,
Senator
Torres
Ray. And then I think the next one would be Senator Tomasoni after Senator Torres Ray. Senator Torres Ray, present your project, and we'll take some brief testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to bring this project before you. As many of you have heard, from this transportation standpoint, the Hiawatha Corridor has been a tremendous success, with ridership extending, exceeding really everyone's expectations, and providing that light rail and other new transit options can work for our city, metro area, and the entire state of Minnesota. The Hiawatha LRT corridor development is a project that we are very excited to present to you today, and the funds that we are asking today will provide needed public investments to make new commercial and housing developments near Franklin Avenue and 46th Street. And I don't know if you've been in our in this area of Minneapolis, but it's a really a very diverse area where we have a lot of individuals who use public transportation. Perhaps, you know, in the current system that we have, that stop and the Lake Street are really where, and the Mall of America is where all the people get in the train. So it's a very important area for us. And with me today is Mark Gardner with the Minneapolis Community Planning and Economic Development Department to describe the project and to talk about this great opportunity.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Mark Garner. I'm a project coordinator with the Minneapolis Department of Community Planning and Economic Development working in the Hiawatha Light Rail Corridor. This afternoon, we're requesting your support for investments to improve infrastructure around two of the major light rail stations in Minneapolis that are undergoing redevelopment at this time. As you're aware, fully realizing the potential of the light rail line, both for transportation and land use, requires additional investments in the station areas, and we are here today requesting $3.35 million in state support as part of other city and local and federally funded investments in transportation projects and redevelopment projects to allow the relocation of major utilities that are a barrier to redevelopment within these station areas. Every transportation trip starts and ends with a pedestrian experience. And as the surrounding areas around the LRT stations are developing successfully, more and more people are riding and biking to the stations in these emerging neighborhood station areas. Over 7,500 units have been built. Housing units have been built within a quarter mile of the LRT stations in Minneapolis within the last decade. And in the neighborhood station areas, more than any other place, they truly meet the BET4 test, that but for the provision of modern rail transit investments, we would not see this important investment, redevelopment, and growth occurring. The Hiawatha LRT corridor is a rail corridor through much of the neighborhoods of Minneapolis. As such, there are major infrastructure barriers, the most significant which in this corridor are high-voltage power lines that have not been modernized throughout the corridor, and also some things like underground water mains and utilities that need to be relocated in order to facilitate further development. Minneapolis and our partners, Hennepin County in particular, have been strong investors in this corridor, both in economic development and also in additional infrastructure improvements, and the first generation of improvements has been completed. Franklin Avenue and 46th Street stations are two of the stations where existing infrastructure barriers pose the greatest challenge to realizing the potential of the stations. We're requesting $3.35 million in state funds to complement $3.99 million in additional investments that are programmed for transportation projects and redevelopment projects at these stations. I hope that the packet I provided provides a lot of photographs showing the level of not only planning but also indicative cost estimates, conceptual design work that has been completed. A significant transportation project at Franklin Avenue will begin construction next year. We would like to have the resources to facilitate additional utility relocation as part of that project in order to remove the significant barriers to further redevelopment within that station area. Similarly, at 46th Street, we have cost estimates for modernizing the only segment of the power line corridor that was not modernized when Trunk Highway 55 was reconstructed. That wide utility corridor, which has aging and inefficient steel trellis towers, provides a significant barrier not only for pedestrians accessing, crossing through safe pedestrian environments around the station area, but also for redevelopment in the area. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Garner. Are there questions or comments for Mr. Garner or for Senator Torres-Ray? Seeing none, thank you very much for your presentation, and the bill will be considered among the recommendations for the full committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Next, we have Senator Tomassoni regarding the Chisholm-Hibbing Airport hangar. Following Senator Tomassoni, we will have Senator Clark. She's not available. Ever? 5 minutes? Fine.
Want me to take
if
that
she's
much
not
time?
Here by the time we finish with Senator Tomassoni, we'll start back with we're going to go the members of the subcommittee from least senior to most senior. Senator Tomassoni.
It's very nice of you, Madam Chair, to allow the people who aren't on the
committee before
to hear their bills first. Madam Chair and committee members, Senate File 2002 is a request for bonding money to build a new hangar at the Chisholm-Hibbing Airport, specifically for the Department of Natural Resources water bombers. And these two planes are parked at the airport all summer long and are there in case of a forest fire and the need to actually go help put the forest fire out. And the DNR then sends them to Arizona for servicing in the wintertime. And the existence of a hangar at the Hibbing Airport not only would make it more convenient for everybody, it would actually, I think, save money for the DNR. And in addition, we have a LifeLink helicopter line that is running out of the Hibbing Airport, and the hangar would be a multi-use hangar that would also be used to keep these helicopters inside during inclement weather and to make sure that there's this ability to transport people who are in need of the helicopter service. So what I'll do is, Madam Chair, in the interest of time, is to turn this over to the Executive Director of the Hibbing Chisholm Airport. Sean, go ahead and say your name for the record and let everybody know.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Ms. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sean Jamolis. I'm the Executive Director, Chisholm-Hibbing Airport Authority, at the newly named Range Regional Airport. I thank you for the opportunity of being here today. As Senator Tomasoni stated, we have a hangar project that's of quite significance to the state and the region. Please don't just think of this as a hangar building. This is going to be important as far as our state and regional economic development and is also into state airport infrastructure. We see investment here that will give us a return of many dollars that will help us not only locally reduce our tax levy from our airport, but we'll also commit funds to the state's aeronautic construction fund. As stated, the Minnesota DNR does own a couple aircraft that they use for firefighting our state's wildfires. They mostly stay at the Range Regional Airport through the summer. They're outside, and the maintenance is done outside. Basically, they're subject to high winds and hail, which could put them out of commission. Even though the state owns these aircraft, they're contracted to Aeroflight Incorporated in Kingman, Arizona. The pilots and the mechanics are with this company. They are removed from our state at the end of October, flown 1,200 miles to Kingman, Arizona, for the purposes of maintaining these aircraft. They're brought back in April, just in time for our firefighting season. It's estimated that this 1,200-mile trip with two aircraft will cost $36,000 just in fuel alone. We'd like to see those aircraft stay in our state, and we'd like to see the jobs stay in our state year-round. By producing this hangar, we'd also have a maintenance facility that would be able to attract other companies from within the state and outside the state for bringing their aircraft to be maintained at our airport, producing more work and jobs. The second component to this is enhancing emergency services, not only through the DNR wildlife or the wildfire suppression, but also the LifeLink medical helicopter operations that are there. They right now support about 20 people at our airport. We have them in a makeshift temporary mobile home, and they're operating from our airport about 3-4 times a day, and they've significantly enhanced the emergency response to our region. But the facilities that they're in right now will not meet their long-term needs there. This hangar would also support economic development. As you know, we have a lot of exciting things happening on the Iron Range, and there's a lot of activity forecast in the next few years. We have multi-million dollar aircraft coming to our airport on a weekly basis. The owners and operators of these aircraft have huge investments in these planes. They want them inside, out of the elements year-round, and they even go as far as flying them south here to the Twin Cities to find hangar space while they're visiting our area. We'd like to have a facility that we could accommodate these aircraft and support them as they're investing in our state and our region. And then most importantly, it's sustaining and it's creating 40-plus jobs. As I stated, LifeLink has about 20 jobs that they operate with. There's about 14 with the DNR. If we have a maintenance facility there, we'll easily add another half a dozen. And that's quite a bit of support there for our regional jobs in the Iron Range. The Airport Authority is already committed. We've received a deed grant, and we have matching funds, and we have committed to $500,000. We've already started this project with surveying and site preparation, and we're under design for this project. We hope to be shovel-ready by this spring and construct it this fall. We've looked at federal and state funding for this already. The dollars just aren't there right now for that. It's also very difficult. A building is of not as high priority as a safety and security item is with the FAA and the state for such things as runway, airfield lighting, and security fencing. So that's why we're here. Again, I think this is an investment that's going to be supporting multi-purposes, many businesses on the region, and also contribute to the state and help the state with their wildfire operations.
Thank you very much, Senator Tomasoni. Mr. Jamolis?
Jamolis.
Are there questions or comments? Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, and Senator Tomasoni, or your, is it Mr.
Jamolis?
No, wait a minute. I'm not looking
Sean
at
Sean Jamolis.
Sean Gimelt.
His name is on the last page.
Just clarify, is the hangar that you're building adequate in size to accommodate all of the things that you talked about, both the DNR and the Lifeline and the business aircraft?
It is.
Gimolas.
Particularly the two DNR aircraft are the tallest airplanes at our field on a frequent basis. It'll accommodate them. The next size would be a Gulfstream 5 that SR brings in, and we'll accommodate that as well. And then everything else is smaller and will fit.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson.
Thank you very much. Senator Tomasoni, any final comment?
Quick comment on SR. SR is the Indian company that's building the steel mill on the Iron Range, and so they come in frequently, and we expect them to be there for 20 or 30 years, so we want to be able to accommodate them also.
Thank you very much, Senator Thomas.
I don't have any final comments, Madam Chair, other than thank you very much for hearing this, and
absolutely.
I hope you rate it high. Thank you very much.
Senator Clark. And then we'll hear from Senator Bach. I think I saw him come in. And then again, we'll go back to the bills from the members of the committee. Senator Clark, you make your presentation, and we need to be out of this room at 1 o'clock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll make sure we are
still
brief.
We still have 10, 12 bills to go, so if you'd be very brief,
we will be brief,
it.
Even though there are three of us. We can all do the minute waltz if we need to. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, we are here on what we believe is not only an exciting but an important project that leverages a lot of federal dollars. This is the extension or the completion of the North Star Corridor. I was proud to get to ride on that inaugural journey, and it is fabulous. We won't take your time up today. Having said that, while it ends in a place that's a good place, it's not ending in the destination that makes the most sense. Right now it stops in Big Lake. We need to get it up to the St. Cloud area, so we're really making the best use of this. The most important thing right now is we're asking for $1 million investment that is going to generate $3 million that Senator Klobuchar has made sure is in a federal bill for us. So this is a key piece in us moving forward on this project. I'm going to turn it over so that we can make sure other people are talking, but this is the journey. This is the ride that's going to have the highest ridership of any other place in the state.
And isn't the case it's a single track right now, and that's what the improvement would make it another track there? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Felix Schmiesing, Sherburne County Commissioner, member of the NCDA. There is a section of track that is about 7 miles long that would have to be doubled to accommodate this rail.
And that's what this project is?
This is the entire project, and that would include that doubling of the track.
What is that track cost, that second track cost? You know, is that broken out?
It is not broken out. I believe it is around $9 million. Yeah. I'm kind of winging it there.
Okay.
If I could just add one item, too. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today, but the one item that I would like to have you take away from this is in our rail forum plan that is being presented to you folks in draft form right now and will be completed soon, we find that the number of folks that want to travel between the St. Cloud metropolitan area and the Minneapolis metropolitan area is 1.9 million. We know that the next number is 1.2 million, and that's the number of folks that want to go between Minneapolis and Chicago. So this corridor has the ability to carry more people than any other corridor that we're looking at in this state rail plan. Mm-hmm. So I certainly think that this is an opportunity to complete this corridor and probably validate that entire plan by demonstrating with the numbers that we can achieve that rail plan is viable. Thank you.
Pretty straightforward. Do we need further comments, Senator Fobey? Commissioner, or not?
Just in closing, Madam Chair and members, thanks for your consideration today. This has been a project, as you know, you've heard a lot about it. You see it, the posters all over. It is something that we need to complete. We as Minnesotans don't like to do things halfway. So we need to see this completed for our constituents, for the whole state. We've been hit so economically in our area, and this would be a great boost to the area. So I really appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Clark.
If I could just add, Senator, Dan Earhart, chair of the North Star and Noak County Commissioner. You know, this is a project that has been going on for 13 years, 30 communities working together. We have a history of being successful, and we have North Star in operation. And I certainly want to thank each of you here that participated in that. And we're ready, willing, and to move forward with your help. And we're going to get this project done and all the way to St. Cloud. And it'll be part of the overall state rail system, which will be good for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, it seems to me I've heard that the final destination is Rice at time. What, explain that. Can it stop at St. Cloud, or was there some reason that Rice has been on the docket for the extension?
Commissioner Earhart, briefly.
Senator, the original destination was Rice, Minnesota. And then when we got into this formula process, and there was delays for many, many reasons. Many things happened in the delays here in the 2005. The legislative process stopped on this, and we then seen a different criteria that we had to use, and it was cut back to Big Lake. And now trying to move it ahead, we find that system, that criteria of evaluation is still there. Congressman Oberstar is working on taking it out. There was just an announcement. They're going to change the criteria, but it's going to be a difficult process to meet that criteria and move it all the way to Rice.
Well Madam Chair, I could never – I'm very familiar with that whole area. I could never understand why Rice. I mean, St. Cloud I can understand. I don't understand Rice, going to Rice.
Commissioner?
If I could
– Chair and Commissioner, because – Benton County was part of the, and Congressman Oberstar involved in there and looking at.
He represented Benton County.
You got it up there, and partly that opens the gate to a lot of people from Brainerd that coming together and going to a Rice station. And
thank you very much.
Very quickly.
Thank you, Senator Clark. One final comment.
I'm sorry, Senator Olson. The other piece of this is for a lot of people that plan to utilize this from Greater Minnesota, Rice is less populated. It would be a good place to have land for park and ride. And eventually, when we can get to Fargo, among other things, that's perhaps part of the path. So there are some other reasons in addition.
Thank you very much, Senator Clark. Senator Bach. And then we have one proposal from a Republican. And that's going to be the first one on the committees, from the committees. Reaching out across the aisle, Senator.
All right.
So Senator Bach and then Senator Youngbauer, and then we'll come back to Senator Carlson. Senator Bach? Yeah.
Madam Chair, thank you for giving us the opportunity to be here. I have with me Mr. Brian Reichs, who runs the Duluth International Airport. Okay. Last year, the legislature issued bonds for $4.9 million for the first phase of a new terminal and parking facility for the Duluth International Airport to move the parking area so that the terminal building can be moved further away from the runway because the current parking area, actually the tail section of the airplane actually is in the flight path, so it violates FAA regulations. So the terminal building right now at Duluth is very inadequate. I personally have been there, personally have flown out of there, and post 9/11 security issues make it just not functional any longer. I mean, when you move through security now, there are no bathroom facilities for people waiting for their planes, and the holding area for people that want to get on aircrafts is nowhere near large enough. Used to be people were dispersed all around the terminal building, but now post 9/11, that's not the case, and it's very, very congested. This is a good project, and I don't think people should think of it as a local project. The Duluth International Airport serves a very large regional area all the way up to Winnipeg, Canada, and well out into Wisconsin. So the work that from the bonds that we appropriated last year is all substantially complete. This project is ready to go, and Once the legislature approves the bonding authority, the design work is substantially done. It'll be ready to go out for bid. So it leverages a lot of federal money. This is going to be over 50% paid for by federal funds. And pretty excited about getting the people to work, not only to work on the construction, but a new facility that will better serve the public.
Thank you, Senator Bott. Mr. Rikes.
Chair Rest and members, thank you. My name is Brian Ricks. I'm Executive Director of the Duluth Airport Authority. As I've stated in the past, this project has been going on for quite some time. Actually, 2003 is when we first started talking about it. Senator Bach did discuss much of the project justification. Really, we have tremendous limitations and congestions with the existing facility in a post-9/11 era. Multiple screening checkpoints. Once passengers go through screening, they're put into very small hold rooms with inadequate seating and space, no restrooms, no concessions. Obviously, TSA wants passengers to get through screening. The airlines want passengers to get through screening as soon as possible. And once those passengers get into those areas, the only option if someone has to use a restroom is to wait until the plane gets to a altitude that you can get up and walk around or go back prior to getting on the aircraft, back through security, taking your bag with you, and then going back through the security process again. We do have tail height issues with the proximity of the building to the existing runway, which violate FAA airspace requirements. Duluth also is an international port of entry. We have a lot of traffic from Europe coming that is destined to the West Coast that is stopping in Duluth and clearing customs and buying fuel, and we need international facilities to accommodate that type of a traffic. We are also Delta's number one diversion airport for both domestic and international aircraft. And as we heard the Rochester incident, Congress has become very stringent on getting people off airplanes if they're diverted, and we need, again, this facility to accommodate passengers getting off large international aircraft. We do have actually over $50.9 million in funding commitments. Thank you for your support of Phase 1. The federal portion is in excess of 50%. Phase 1 did put 136 people to work. We advertised it as shovel-ready. It was shovel-ready, and as Senator Bach indicated, it is substantially complete. We are ready to move on Phase 2. Part of the stimulus money we received did go into completing the design of the project. Phase 2 is $53 million.
Excuse me. Please don't approach the members at the table. We are very close to members of the public, but consider it a stone wall between this table and any chairs around the committee. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Ricks.
Phase 2 is a $53 million project. It is shovel-ready. Our bonding request is 11.7. It will complete the project. It leverages $41.3 million in other funding, the majority of that being FAA, $28.5 million, Duluth Airport Authority, $7.8 million, State Airports Trust Fund, $4.5 million, and about half a million of miscellaneous funding. It creates in excess of 200 construction jobs, and for your knowledge, we have 182 full and part-time permanent jobs in our terminal complex, so it expands that. We've expanded air service in the last year. We have now United Airlines started service December 17th. Allegiant Air also has added service direct nonstop to Orlando. They offer service to both Orlando and Las Vegas, along with our Delta service to Minneapolis and Detroit. This service is critical for the region. Senator Bach talked about this airport serving a very large region. It extends west to Bemidji, east to the Upper Peninsula, and well up into Winnipeg and Thunder Bay. Our passenger numbers are, again, in excess of or between 300,000 and 350,000 total passengers annually. We have Cirrus Design in Duluth. They are a very important business in our community and region, along with the 148th Fighter Wing based at the airport, and this project is very important for those companies as well. All in all, the airport generates about a $1.3 billion economic impact and supports 4,400 aviation sector jobs. So I appreciate your time today and appreciate
your consideration. Thank you very much, Mr. Ricks. Are there questions or comments for Senator Bach or Mr. Ricks? Seeing none, thank you very much, Senator Bach. Senator Jungbauer. And then we'll go to Senator Carlson's project.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Senator Jungbauer, we have a half an hour. We have eight bills.
I am known, Madam Chair, for my short presentations, and I've already queued up our people here that has to be short. Okay. So I'll say short and sweet. This is a request to move forward on a Ramsey station stop on the North Star. We don't know why it wasn't included in the first round, as we know there were some issues in going up to St. Cloud. Ramsey already has a parking ramp sitting there waiting for this stop. We have all the economic development of the area would be primarily focused, or the big portion of it, on Ramsey, and we'll let you guys talk about what's going on in that city.
Welcome to the committee, and if you would identify yourself for the record.
Certainly. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for your opportunity to address you here today. My name is Matt Look. I'm a Ramsey City Council member. As background, the city of Ramsey recently purchased 150 acres as part of a foreclosed town center project directly adjacent to the new North Star commuter rail line and Trunk Highway 10. The project offers a live, work, and play environment, promising a livable and walkable community. We are before you here today to request partial funding for the completion of the North Star rail stop. The $4.3 million request is one of many funding sources necessary to construct the stop. Current estimates are $13.7 million to complete this project. We would like to emphasize the benefits of the project. First and foremost, this stop will bring economic benefits to the city, county, and state. Aside from Minneapolis, this is the only stop that will offer immediate economic development as part of a transit-oriented development. If this bonding bill is referred to as a jobs bill, this development has estimated job creation of 3,900 upon build-out. With the anticipation of the North Star commencing operation, the city has invested in and is currently operating a straight-shot commuter bus line into Minneapolis with a ridership of approximately 250 daily trips. Ridership is growing and is anticipated to grow as projects become developed. We are currently negotiating with two large apartment complex developers, one consisting of a 250-unit upscale apartment complex and another 350-unit apartment complex consisting of workforce and market-rate rental units, 600 in total. Additional to this, and perhaps more importantly, the City of Ramsey is a finalist in the VA clinic proposal, which will be located within walking distance to the proposed rail stop location. Current estimates for veteran trips are 36,000 annually, many of which will be able to take advantage of the rail as an option for accessing patient services. As North Star offers an alternative transportation option to highway vehicle traffic, we believe education will lead to increased ridership. As riders become educated in the benefits of using public transit options, we are confident these figures will grow. In combination with North Star's onboard Wi-Fi, the City of Ramsey has invested in a four-story covered structured parking, a police station immediately adjacent to the stop, as well as 24-hour surveillance, all of which will prove to be beneficial to the user, offering convenience and safety to prospective riders seeking more environmentally friendly options. Lastly, it is important to note that adding an additional stop as part of a Phase 2 plan, there would not require additional rail cars. All capital equipment investments will be more efficiently used with the addition of a Phase 2 station. We believe this stop will be the necessary catalyst to providing the transit-oriented development with the missing necessary component, that being transit. State bonding monies are essential to completing the full funding package necessary for this rail station. We ask for your support in this project, and we would stand for any questions.
Thank you very much. Sir, do you want to add your comments?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Ulrich. I'm Ramsey City Administrator, and I would only add to that the North Star Corridor has been a significant investment by the state and by the federal government, and that for incremental cost of a station, we can get greater utilization and provide economic development stimulus to this area. So, thank you very much,
Senator Jungbauer, and your testifiers. You were indeed brief. Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson has Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transit. He has something else here. And Lower Minnesota River Watershed District. Which one do you want to take up first, Senator Carlson?
The Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transit.
Members are getting a handout on that. Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. What we're looking at here is an investment that continues the Cedar Avenue Transit Way development. I want to tell you a little bit about this particular this particular area here.
Please be brief.
We will be very brief. This is a shining example of if you build it, they will come. This opened up on the Apple Valley Transit Center opened up January 4th of 2010. And I went down there the next day, and every one of the 750 parking spaces was full. It's already full. It's already utilized heavily. What we have here is a $9 million request, which actually will take care of some of the additional things that are needed. There are some of them that are required by federal mandate. That's sound walls. But also we have some things up at the Mall of America that are for security, and also the right-of-way acquisition. I have with me Dakota County Commissioner Will Branning, and we will stand for any questions. We'll be extremely brief. I've just deleted everything that I was going to say, so we'll be real brief.
Wonderful.
Here. And Mr.
Branning,
if
you would identify yourself for the record, we'll be pleased to have your brief testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Est and Senator Dibble. It's a pleasure to be with you today. You've seen me before. Some of you have, anyway. Cedar Avenue Transitway started in 1982 with a young senator asking for opt-out legislation. And that's what started the Cedar Avenue Transitway and the Minnesota Valley Transit, Suburban Transit. Cedar Avenue has been under study since the early 2000s. And Senator Murphy has worked with most of you, Senator Rest as well. We have come a long way.
Who was that senator that you were referring to?
Rodriguez.
Carolyn.
Carolyn Rodriguez.
Carolyn Rodriguez, yes.
She was an Apple Valley, Dakota right. County resident, yes. And helped us get transit into Dakota County. We have come a long way. We have on the books right now about $105 million. Unfortunately, it's not enough. We need some additional dollars to cover some of the acquisitions along Cedar Avenue. Of course, the Federal Highway Administration, along with the county, has mandated that we have to build a noise wall. They specified specifications for that noise wall, which is pricey. And we're moving forward with that. We have to do it, or we're going to lose $22 million of federal money. And we don't want to lose that. But another way, I think Senator Carlson said it, if you build it, they will come. Well, they more than came. Now we have a real good problem to address. How do we cover the expansion? These dollars we're asking for are not for expansion. We know that BRT is an evolving transit way. We don't build it like a train track or Hiawatha or any of those. We've specified segments and elements along the way that we're building. The Lakeville acquisition into the transit way created some additional demands, such as a transit stop on 162nd Street, such as serving 181st Street. We have to acquire properties to get the shoulders along that. So those are elements. These funds that we're asking for in the $9 million will get us on the terminus to 181st Street, and it'll also give us to what we call destination, which is the Mall of America, 82nd Street. The 82nd Street will be the main terminus for the BRT.
Thank
and
you very much.
With me is Sam O'Connell. She is a staff to Dakota County, and I'll ask her if she would like to add to it.
If you'd identify yourself, please be extremely brief. We still have seven more bills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sam O'Connell with Dakota County. I believe you have a handout that
Great.
Clearly identifies the corridor, so I would just stand for any questions you may have.
Any questions for these fine people and Senator Carlson on this project? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Senator Carlson, now you have...
I just want to make one more comment
River
on...
Watershed District.
I want to make one more brief comment on this particular bill. This is one that is supported by the governor, but albeit at a smaller amount.
Okay, and when we finish Senator Carlson's second bill, we'll move right into Senator Dibble's bills. Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, this is for, actually, this is, interestingly, this is the smallest request on our docket today, but it does have very big important ramifications. This is on, this is for $225,000 for some land acquisition, some environmental work, and construction improvements for the dredge material site on the river valley of the Minnesota River. And what this does is this allows the Corps of Engineers to place their dredgings when they dredge the river channel in a place that's nearby, which is important to the cost of the process of dredging. And what it will do is allow them to keep within a certain distance of where the dredgings are dug up, I guess you could say, and deposited. This is something that will support commerce on the Minnesota River Valley, and it goes primarily all the way up to Cargill in Savage. With me is Mr. Terry Schwab. He's the administrator of the Lower Minnesota River Valley Watershed District, and he can give any more details or answer any questions if you have some.
Welcome to the committee. If you would give us your name, please, for the record, and if you have a brief comment, we welcome hearing it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. Thank you for having me here today. The Lower Minnesota River Watershed District, along with its watershed responsibilities, continues as the local sponsor for the Army Corps of Engineers. Our district is 80 square miles, and it's very linear from the confluence with the Mississippi River up to the city of Carver. Very insignificant when you consider the entire basin is several thousand square miles, 100,000 square miles in area. The products that come into the ports of the 9-foot channel at Savage come from as far away as North and South Dakota and most, about 50% of Minnesota. We're looking for money to for bonding to finance the acquisition of a another site that is required by the Corps of Engineers in the area of 494 and the confluence, along with the development of dredge management plan. And this is to support the key element of the intermodal transportation system that the barge industry and navigation channel is. Once we acquire the site, we'll be creating jobs in the construction industry for transportation of the materials for a beneficial use, ensuring that the continued operation of the 9-foot channel is the most effective form of transportation to get Minnesota bulk products to and from market. And it's also the most environmental friendly form of transportation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions or comments for Senator Carlson or his witness? Seeing none, thank you very much, Senator Carlson. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Senator Dibble has, where's my list here?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. We'll start with the transportation interchange facility. There should be a brochure coming around that provides a high-level description of what that would be, but very, very quickly, Madam Chair and members, this is a request for $8 million for a grant to do environmental analysis, engineering design, et cetera, to start the work on developing an intermodal or an interchange facility, I should say. I think as you look at the brochure and you look down, look below the word impact right in the middle, and you look at the LRT facilities, rail, bike, bus, and parking, I think we've touched on most of those facilities that are either happening or going to happen sometime in the near future adjacent to the Twin Stadium, all of these lines are going to converge. A lot of people, a lot of transportation coming together in one place, and that needs to happen efficiently, smoothly, safely, and in a way that also promotes larger economic development and community development goals. With that, I have Commissioner Peter McLaughlin from Hennepin
Commissioner,
County.
Commissioner, if you identify yourself, please, we would appreciate a brief comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Peter McLaughlin, Chair of the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority. My comments today on the Minneapolis Transportation Interchange is, one, it's a hub today. There are 250 rail arrivals and departures and over 1,900 bus arrivals and departures in that center today and each and every workday from now on. There are going to be, we'll have up to 500 rail operations when Central Corridor opens up and NLX opens up. This will be the place where Southwest, Bottineau, Central, Hiawatha all come together, as well as North Star, Little Crow, NLX, and these all come together in this one spot. And we're working, it's in this interchange, this hub is in the state draft rail plan. It's in the Met Council's transportation plans. It has received, it's part of the dual hub concept, the depot in St. Paul, the interchange in Minneapolis. We received our first federal funding, $500,000 in federal fiscal 2010. And there's been over $50 million in local, public, and private investment already, so we're not asking the state to be first in on this. Be happy to stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Are there questions or comments for Commissioner McLaughlin or Senator Dibble? Seeing none, thank you very much, Senator Dibble. You have another bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Then we'll move to Senator Murphy's and do mine last.
Madam Chair, this is a request for $6.75 million, again, to begin the process of designing and ultimately getting to implementation of a transit facility on 35W at Lake Street. Madam Chair and members, this has been the subject of a tremendous amount of community participation and participation between Hennepin County, City of Minneapolis, area business partners as well, to serve, again, a number of transportation modes that are converging at this spot. It needs to happen in a way that serves the large employer campuses nearby, the residential area. Lake Street in this stretch is being rebuilt. It's going to be consistent with the Complete Streets policy recently adopted by Hennepin County. Those policies are coming forward for consideration by the state. As well as things are now, the Urban Partnership Agreement comes up through this stretch. It's going to be, fantastic, efficient movement, transit and high-occupancy vehicles, and there's this gap right here at 35W over Lake Street. Buses are going to have to go over to the other shoulder, pick up folks, and then get back into traffic, get into downtown where the Urban Partnership Agreement picks up again on Marquette and 2nd, so it addresses that significant gap that I think will be very apparent to the public once the Urban Partnership Agreement is fully implemented. So this would get us on the path towards addressing those issues. We have Mr. Nukola, Martha Nukola from Hennepin County, who's here to share some thoughts.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Martha Nukola, Hennepin County Public Works Administrator. As Senator Dibble said, under the Urban Partnership Agreement, the transit will be operated in the median of I-35W, but that will stop at 46th Street. In order to pick up passengers at Lake Street, you got to weave 16 blocks, 5 lanes, so it's a safety issue. So in order to enhance the transit improvements, both MnDOT, Hennepin County, Met Council, and the City of Minneapolis working together to do the preliminary design, 30% design of the project. So that's what these funds will be used for, in order to improve and enhance the safety of the transit along I-35W.
Thank you very much. Are there questions or comments for Senator Dibble or his witnesses? Seeing none, Senator Murphy. You have that.
Madam Chair, members.
Just do that and see if there's questions. All right.
Port Development Assistance and Rail Service Improvements. Which one do you want to do first?
Madam Chair, if I could do the Port Development.
Absolutely. First. Port Development Assistance, members. Number 23 on the list.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, today we're hearing the Port Development Assistance Bill. This is a program that we have put money in the past. Almost every year that I've been in the legislature, there's been a little bit of money spent in this area. We just heard from some previous testifiers about the most efficient means of moving large quantities of material back and forth to market, and it's obviously our riverways is absolutely the cheapest form of transportation out there. I started working on the Port Development Assistance Fund back in about 95, I believe, and since then we've made millions of dollars of improvements to our ports, bulkheads, port facilities, transfer facilities in our port communities. This has resulted in major economic vitality in these areas around these ports. With me today is Mr. White from the Red Wing Port Authority, and I think that you've been the Port Authority for what, 15 years?
About 14 years.
14 years, okay.
Welcome, Mr. White.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. My name is Myron White. I'm director of the Port Authority in Red Wing. I'd like to thank Senator Murphy and members of the subcommittee for your past support of the Port Development Assistance Program. As Senator Murphy pointed out, I'll be very brief. This program has helped us maintain critical infrastructure so we can facilitate the movement of products in both the Great Lakes and the Upper Mississippi Waterway System. You know, as you well know, doesn't just impact the cities of Red Wing, Duluth, St. Paul, and Winona. It impacts really the upper Midwest. It is a wide-ranging impact, the program. From a Red Wing Port Authority standpoint, much of our infrastructure predates World War II and hasn't had a lot of attention since World War II until the Port Development Assistance Program came along, which allowed us to make those critical infrastructure investments and has gone a long way. We have, through just the Port Authorities, we have eliminated literally thousands of truck trips annually through downtown Red Wing. And if you've been through downtown Red Wing, it's a relatively busy, congested area. And if we can, on a given day, if we can eliminate up to 6,000 truck trips through downtown Red Wing in the summer, that's a huge impact from a safety concern. As Senator Murphy points out, you can't get a safer, more fuel-efficient, more environmentally efficient way to move bulk commodities than on our waterways.
Those nice, beautiful hanging baskets in downtown Red Wing in the summer.
Beautiful hanging baskets.
Yes.
Now a little less diesel fumes to
exactly.
To
All right.
Contaminate.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Anything further from the committee or anyone else? Thank you, Senator Murphy. Your next bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Thanks.
Mercy account.
Now, Mr. Chairman, our next bill is for the Mercy account, which is our statewide rail improvement account. And both of these asks were for $10 million, I believe, both the ports and for the rail account. Now, both of these forms of transporting bulk commodity items are a lot cheaper than running them on our roads or putting them on planes. We all know that. We've done, the Mercy Fund has done, which is basically a revolving loan. The money that we've put in there has come back fourfold at least. Is that right, Mr. Appitz? Yeah. Has come back at least fourfold through economic development, tax returns, things like that. I can't say enough good things about some of the work that the short line railroads have done to help promote economic activity, especially in greater Minnesota. You know, we've heard from previous testifiers today about the need to improve their rail lines. The Mercy Fund is absolutely the place where we can get a lot of that work done. And, you know, these folks have been really good at working with all of the railroads to ensure that the smooth flow of commodities happens in Minnesota. And with that, I'll let Mr. Appetz take over here.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record, Mr.
Appetz. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Appetz. I'm representing the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association in Minnesota, which is the Association of Short Line and Regional Railroads here in the state of Minnesota. I put a map in front of you right now. It's the state rail map, the state freight rail map, to take a look at the rich fabric that Minnesota has. And I'll be very quick, Mr. Chairman. I did want to offer just one quick personal note, and that today is kind of like a little piece of heaven for me. It really is. For 20 years, I've been preaching the importance of railroads, and today I'm just a little tenor in the Alleluia chorus. It is a delight to be here, especially with Senator Murphy. Quickly to that map, Minnesota is a rich fabric. We've got four major railroads, four of the seven major railroads. We've got 19 small railroads running in the state. We've got the eighth greatest amount of mileage, track mileage, in the nation, eighth greatest. We've got 4,500 miles of track, 1,400 miles of those are short line and regional railroads. 30% of the freight in this state by tonnage moves on the railroads. It's a very, very important fabric. So important that you all decided about a year and a half ago to figure out how to make it an even more effective system and created the state and authorized the state in 20 years, the first state rail plan to be put together. Dave Christensen, who's been in charge of this, along with Bill Gardner over there, and compliments to their work. They've said they've laid out a vision for the state and its railroads going forward. I'm here today simply to ask you for some mercy.
Have mercy. I don't know now.
Have
bad
mercy
puns,
on the
you
small
get
railroads
a
of the state
of
Minnesota.
For every bad pun.
I'm spelling mercy, MRSI, Minnesota State or Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program. In short, the request that Senator Murphy makes is, as he said, for $10 million. I'll just add a little caveat to that. The $45 million you've put in the last 30 years has generated about $135 million in additional activity through the revolving fund, through federal loans and grants that have come in here. It's also helped us get through some tough times in the state with about $12 million that has come out of that fund and directly gone to offset some of the budget deficits we've had. So hopefully we can restore some of that. The state rail plan says we need about $500 million to get up to the level in the short lines that that is expected to help move freight in this state. $10 million gets us a little ways down the line in the next 20 years. Thank you, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Anything else, members? Thank you, Senator Murphy. Senator Rest. We might
Thank
make
you,
it
Mr.
in under the wire here, folks.
Mr. Chairman, also just want to announce, since there are members who have left, that we will get the ranking sheets to the members of the appropriate subcommittees and the people who are on my subcommittee. They will return them to me with the rankings, people who are on transit to Senator Dibble. We will get these sheets to the members who are not present, and we would ask that you return them. When is the full committee meeting, Senator Dibble, Senator Murphy, you know? Senator Murphy, when do we need to have, Mr. Chairman, when do we need to have our recommendations to the full committee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest.
When do you want them?
Next week?
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow would be fabulous.
Okay, well, we'll get the message out. Anybody who wants to participate in making a recommendation to the full committee needs to get these sheets back to you by the end of the day tomorrow.
It'll be to us today?
Mr. Yeah,
they're already ready. They're ready. For people who are here, they're ready. You can take them.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, Ms. Berzosky just told me that Tuesday we're hearing all the agency bonding requests.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we have them by Tuesday, that would be fine.
Okay. Well, then by
then
Tuesday.
Then we can kind of sit
so
down.
So you get over the weekend, and so people, mm-hmm. if you want to review the materials that were given out, because there's a lot of projects, then you can do that and use your ranking sheet and get it to me or to Senator Dibble, maybe by Monday, and then we can tabulate them or whatever and get them to you by Tuesday.
Great.
Okay, thank you very much.
Senator, we have Botineau Corridor and,
yes,
and Capital
Botineau,
Area.
I'm going to start with Botineau. Botineau, the Botineau Corridor is a corridor that extends from downtown Minneapolis through my district, including Golden Valley, Robbinsdale, mm-hmm. Crystal, and New Hope, and then up into Senator Scheid's district, Brooklyn Park, Osseo, and Senator Limmer's district, and Maple Grove.
generally following what was the former County Road 81. Hennepin County has already spent $1 million of its own money in developing an alternative analysis for the proper transit initiative to be in that corridor, and what the bill asks for is $1.5 million to do, like, is the next step, which is the environmental analysis and project development center. Mr. Commissioner McLaughlin is here, and Mr. Gladke is here to give brief testimony for this project. Go ahead,
Mr. Gladke. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Joe Gladke with Hennepin County, Manager of Engineering and Transit Planning. Over the past 18 months, we've been working on an alternatives analysis study for the Bottineau Corridor, which has studied a total of 12 bus rapid transit options and 9 LRT options. We're really wrapping up that study right now. We've got a website, www.bottransit.org, if you're interested in the details of that. We're really looking to get this next phase of the environmental analysis underway for the corridor. Thanks to the help of Congressman Ellison, we've been able to secure $250,000 in federal funding for 2010. We're also going to seek additional federal funding as well in 2011 to help with the study as well. So I'd be happy to take any questions folks may have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Gladke. Commissioner McLaughlin.
The only thing I'd add, Mr. Chairman, members, is that this will be a through train from Hiawatha. Hiawatha will get to the interchange that I described earlier, and then it would continue as Bottineau. And so it will be a continuous operation, very efficient, and get you to this hub where you can move around and transfer.
Like Southwest out. Will become central.
Correct.
Okay. Interlining, we call that.
So Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
So the study isn't complete, but it has been determined that this should be LRT rather than BRT?
That's correct.
All right. Anything else, members? All right. Capital area.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This project is last on our agenda, but I can tell you it is probably first in my heart. the Capitol building in and of itself has very little constituency among legislators. We come here, we work here, we appreciate the beauty, and we are ever so reluctant, perhaps the House more reluctant than the Senate, to spend money on making sure that the Capitol remains a premier example of Cass Gilbert's genius. We want to maintain that with this particular project as LRT goes along the University Avenue and the southern face of the Capitol. Mr. Mandrell is here from the who is the principal planner for the Capital Area Architectural Planning Board, of which I'm a member, as well as Senator Pappas. And the CAP board has reviewed extensively the elements of the improvements that need to be made on the southern side of the Capitol. As LRT comes along, and the so that we have a public approach to the Capitol from the back that doesn't look like it's just a big old warehouse, and that maintains the dignity of this building. So I will turn it over to Mr. Mandrell for a couple of comments, and the request is for $1,250,000.
Mandel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul Mandel, Principal Planner for the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. The only thing I would add, it's actually on the north side, within about 30 feet of the chair's Senate office. And we want to make sure that when this does come through, after having worked on this project for 20 years.
Where is south?
North.
South is here.
Here, I'm sorry. The north.
North,
side.
Yeah. We knew what you meant.
I get
the other,
I
the other
usually
south.
Call it the back of the building, but I've been corrected on that a number of times. It's easier to call it in the back. Okay.
Yes. Mr. Chair, we want to make sure it comes through in a manner compatible with the Capitol, in a manner as safe as possible for the pedestrians visiting, the visitors coming to, and all the people working here. So it includes lighting, it includes railing and ornamental railing where appropriate, within 20 feet of the Capitol building that's been agreed to by the Cap Board and Historical Society. And in a fashion that, I mean, we're building this for 100 years, and we don't want this to be the sore point of the Capitol District.
Thank you. And Madam Chair and Mr. Mandel, I don't know if you will actually appreciate this, but just a couple of weeks ago, I took pictures of frost and snow that was getting in under the doors in the stairwell outside of my office. Is pretty surprising.
One of the
I'll forward those to you.
I'm very concerned about is the security in the building. Mm-hmm. And as you may know, a couple of days ago last week, while we were talking about that in the State Government Finance Committee, someone was bashing in the windows at the east entrance. What we've discovered is that the glass that was broken was probably original to the building, and that's a good thing and a bad thing that it lasted that long. However, it is extremely dangerous because it does not shatter in a safe way, and it really, the glass in the entryways around the building should be replaced with shatterproof glass that is up to code, because we were very, very lucky that someone was not seriously injured, wounded, or killed. So thank you very much.
Anything further, Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, is the LRT station there going to be right outside the north steps?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson,
Mandel.
The stations, there are going to be three stations. One will be at Leif Erickson Park, directly in, because of the grade of University Avenue, from Marion Street on, this line, which is running in the median on University Avenue, comes to the south curb line, which puts it even closer to the Capitol. The station will be at Rice, right there at Leif Erickson Park. It'll be the only station that'll be built into a park setting, so it'll be rather special. Then there'll be another station in front of between the Freeman and Freeman and Stassen office building, and a third station down by the Elmer Anderson Department of Human Services on the south side of the freeway. And I would add, as far as timing goes, it's critical that this money is awarded now. The bids are coming this spring, and if we don't get access to the money, the bids will not include these necessities, and I call them necessities.
So, Mr. Chair, that's the first good lobbying we've had for putting it on the priority list, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, Senator Murphy was lobbying something a little earlier.
Yes.
Too, so work the phones this weekend, members.
I'm unlisted, by the way. Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, I just want to say thanks to you and a lot of the people that work on the Capitol Board. If it wasn't for you and your group, you know, our building here would absolutely be a pile of sand.
Buy those sesquicentennial license plates, because now the proceeds go to improve the Capitol building.
And quite frankly, we need more money to improve our building here. I mean, we still have leaks and a lot of problems.
Even Senator Murphy,
have ice coming
in
underneath.
Appreciate that. And even when we do it, you know, we can't seem to get a big pot of money at any one time. But even when the legislature approves these incremental things, it does work toward maintaining the integrity of this wonderful building.
Thanks again.
And Mr. Chairman, the only thing that's more difficult is to get improvement and finish the job at the governor's residence.
All right.
Same thing.
All right. So we know other things to lobby for. With that, we have another committee that's waiting to meet here. So with that, the committee's adjourned.
2012.
Thank you.
We had that all the way. Ventura.